It's Mr. Lou Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live from MCS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, wherever you may be, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day, Jets, Leafs, New Year's Eve. It doesn't get much bigger than this. Puck drop, 6 p.m. tonight with Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3 o'clock, and Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined live at the MTS Center by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And Richard, I must say I'm a little chagrined. You obviously didn't get the dress code. You were supposed to be wearing your fanciest IC blues today.
I forgot, Drew.
Yeah, as you remembered, Ezzy and I may or may not be wearing almost the exact same outfit at the moment, but I think you look sharp.
At least you're both clothed.
That's a good point. At least we are both clothed. You do look sharp, though, Ezzy, I must say. Good.
It's because we're wearing the same thing, Drew.
Exactly. So if I'm looking sharp and you're looking sharp, it's a good start. Anyways, welcome to the program. We have you covered in its entirety, the Jets, Leafs. We will have the most in-depth preview of tonight's action from the MTS Center. Joining us at about 1 hour's time from the National Post, he covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael Trakos is going to join us, have a little bit of a Leafs chat. And I'll tell you what, there's always a buzz in the air. Now, you know, Saturday night, Jets, Leafs is going to, you know, you're going to be excited, you're going to be revved up for that regardless. Then you add in the fact that it's New Year's Eve, and it's just that much more exciting. And, you know, I'm geeked up for tonight's game, as they say.
This game's got serious cachet, and not only does it have cachet, but based upon the NHL Eastern Conference standings,
it's not important.
It's vital.
Yeah.
And, you know, you say a game in December, specifically December 31st, obviously, isn't that important. Well, it is. And in this day and age when, you know, the pack is so close together, 1 point can make the difference making the playoffs and not making the playoffs, especially as when you're competing against a team that is falling a bit and is right with you there. It's a huge game.
Yeah, they're falling a little bit, and they obviously gave up 2 points to the Carolina Hurricanes. The Carolina Hurricanes came back and won two nights ago. There's a lot of importance. There's four teams that are tied with the same amount of points, and obviously the Jets are in seventh place because mm-hmm. of the tiebreakers, which I can't seem to figure out, because the Jets and the Leafs have the identically the same record. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming it's regulation wins.
Yeah, regulation wins is always the tiebreaker.
Yeah. So it's a very important game tonight. As is every single important game in the NHL, unless you're the Columbus Blue Jackets or the Anaheim Ducks,
yeah,
who are pretty much out of it.
Yeah.
So the Eastern Conference is very tight. The Western Conference is very tight. And you're right, Drew, the Leafs being in town is probably the second biggest draw to maybe the Montreal Canadiens, which were obviously here on the opening day.
Yeah, as a fan, though, and I've always had the, you know, for some reason I have a lot of respect for the Montreal Canadiens, but I have animus towards the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't know why that is.
Well, I'll tell you why it is. It's because the Habs, for the most part, have won, you know, so many cups. Obviously, during your childhood, Drew, they won many in the 70s. But, you know, even so, even in our generation, they haven't been, you know, they won the 93 Cup. But they also make the playoffs, and they're the fans. And the Leafs have been terrible for the most part. They had their run in the, you know, late 90s, 2000s. But since then, they haven't made the playoffs since the lockout, and they've been kind of stuffed down our throats, especially because we didn't have an NHL team here. And that's the game that was on Hockey Night in Canada every Saturday night.
Absolutely.
And on, you know, every other station. So now we have the team. We don't see the Leafs ever. I would hazard to guess that people's disdain for the Leafs has faded pretty significantly over the past 4 months.
And probably in correlation to their passion for the Jets. Yeah. And that's an easy compromise to make, I think, for most people.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get too deep into the Leafs-Jets game, let's look back at last night in the NHL. Let's start in Washington. I mean, that's a team that they're coming up quickly in our rearview mirror. Everyone has sort of expected them to be the cream of the crop in the Southeast Division this year. Hasn't worked out that way. They obviously made the coaching change. And, you know, Alex Ovechkin looked sort of like an Alex Ovechkin that we remember in last night's game against the Buffalo Sabres, a 3-1 Capitals victory over the Sabres.
Yeah, Drew, the Capitals come in. I mean, did they look that great? They get 21 shots on net on Ryan Miller. They get outshot 26-21. You know, Thomas Von Kuhlen plays well. He's obviously been spotty this year. The Capitals are rounding into form in a sense. I've still watched them, you know, many times over the past few weeks, and I'm not sold on them. A win's a win. Buffalo hasn't exactly been lighting the world on fire either. But
no.
Ovechkin scores there, and obviously, then, you know, I think a couple of days ago, Semin got on board. I believe that was on Wednesday night. Semin got on the board, got a couple goals. So, yeah, they're rounding into form a little bit. And their system, unlike some teams, we saw Los Angeles here on Thursday night.
Yeah.
But Los Angeles, for the most part, hasn't made massive changes to their system. As far as I could tell, they made some amendments. But
since the coaching change, you mean?
Since the coaching change from Terry Murray to Daryl Sutter. On the other hand, when you have Washington, they've made a significant style change. And they've gone, pulled a 180 from an aggressive style. Although they had curbed that back a little bit under Bruce Boudreau to a very, for the most part, defensive style under Dale Hunter. Now, Washington...
Dull would be a word for it also.
Yeah, but Washington has the ability, Drew. They're so dangerous in transition because they have the speed and skill.
Yeah.
So you can't turn the puck over against that top line that they have, especially when they lock up Semin up there with Backstrom and Ovechkin. So that team is dangerous, and they certainly have the ability to make a run. But I am not yet sold on that Capitals team, and I'm probably less sold on them than I was at the beginning of the year, to be honest.
Right, and we picked them both to win the regular season in the Eastern Conference, yep. And they haven't gotten the game stealing ability of Thomas Vokoun. They obviously missed Mike Green, even though guys like John Carlson and Carl Alzner have been good. But I'd have to agree with you. I mean, I think everyone's expecting the Southeast Division standings to kind of even out. The Florida Panthers are only 4 points ahead of the Jets right now, and I don't even think that the Jets are been given enough credit for the fact that they're in that position where with a win here tonight. I'm not sure if the Panthers play.
They do. The Panthers play Montreal tonight.
So obviously a combination of the Panthers losing and the Jets winning, and then the Jets would be 2 points behind.
With a game in hand still.
And you know what, Ezzy? We're going to talk about the Southeast Division later on in the show, but Florida's an overrated team.
Well, let's look at Florida last night. They got beat on home ice by the Rangers, 4-1 Rangers over the Florida Panthers. The Rangers jumped out to an early 3-0 lead and then sort of cruised to victory after that point in time. First of all, the New York Rangers are a very good hockey team.
Very good hockey
team. And they're going to be an even better hockey team now that Mark Stahl, it seems as if his return is at least somewhere on the horizon.
Yeah,
he's skating.
They have had a bounce back here, obviously, from Michael Delzato, a player we really liked a couple of years ago. 2 years ago, he was great. Last year, he struggled. They have the makings of a very dangerous team. I think we said at the beginning of the year, I thought they were one veteran defenseman away from being as dangerous as any team in the playoffs, and that was including Mark Stahl. You get Mark Stahl back, they've already exceeded my expectations with their performance thus far. And that really, Brandon Dubinsky's finally getting going a bit.
Yeah.
You mentioned Stahl coming back. This team can get better and already looks pretty good. So I think that is as dangerous of a team. And look at last night, Michael Delzato logged 28 minutes of ice time. And as he can skate, he can shoot, he can pass. He's got the skill set as long as he plays discipline. And if you watch 24/7, which we'll talk about later, he talks about kind of playing within himself. And it's a cliche, but it's so true when you're a young defenseman because it's so hard to make it in the league as a young defenseman because your mistakes are so easy to see.
They're magnified.
They're magnified.
Especially in New York where you can't hide.
And that's true, but even a forward doesn't do something as part of the system, most fans won't notice that. A defenseman, even if they make a mistake, they will notice that. So he has shown in his third year now in the National Hockey League, and last year he spent a significant amount of time in the AHL, that he can be a player. And if they have him, and you have Ryan McDonough, who's a nice skater, and the guy they got for Scotty Gomez, as you have Girardi blocking shots. That's the thing I like about the Rangers. They can do it all. They can block shots. They can score. They can hit. They can goaltend. When you have all that versatility, kind of like Boston,
yeah,
you're tough to beat because there's not one way to get you off your game.
That's right. It's a high class problem for a team to have. In Ottawa last night, the Flames went to Ottawa, a matchup of two Canadian teams. The Senators took a 4-3 overtime victory from the Calgary Flames. Calgary continues to struggle. Ottawa's right on the fringe. They're one of the four teams tied for the final Eastern Conference playoff spot. That Senators team is high hopes for that Senators team going forward.
You know how many shots they had on goal? By the way, yesterday was Daniel Alfredson's 400th goal.
That's right.
But that game, that's what that game.
And McGinley's right on the cusp of his 500th goal.
You know how many? And by the way, I like Ottawa.
Yeah.
I've been touting them all year. Since we saw them, I like their young talent. Do you know how many shots on goal they had yesterday, Drew?
They had 49. And 49. How I know that? Because I stalled long enough to look at
this. 49. This team can create offense. It can create speed. I love watching them. I think they're moving in the right direction. And they're dangerous. And when you have a team like that with the confidence, a mix of confidence and carefree style, a confidence in their ability, but a carefree in terms of the overall external expectations that fans may have for them, they're dangerous.
That was an interesting game for Ottawa to win in that Alex Auld was the starter initially for Ottawa, gave up three goals, and then was pulled in favor of Craig Anderson. It was 3-0 Calgary after the first period.
Yeah, and it was. And Erik Karlsson has got a goal and an assist, and he's a beauty. And he's one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. He made David Rundblad expendable because of how much ice time and how good he is on the right side there on the top unit. And with some of their other young defensemen. So there's much to like in Ottawa both this year and long term.
Absolutely. Agreed with that 100%. Another game last night in St. Louis. The Nashville Predators went into St. Louis. It was a 1-1 tie, but they gave the extra point to Nashville because they won the penalty shot competition to win 2-1.
Watched Nashville a lot over the past little while, and I got to say, they don't look very good. And I know this game's 2-1 and more like Nashville style, but the Nashville I've seen lately over the course of a few games there, couldn't defend. And if you're Nashville and you can't defend...
That's what you're based on.
Yeah, that's what you're based on, exactly, Drew. And obviously the Weber concussion now. But the thing about Nashville is they have such a tough time scoring still. And their defensive structure, as to me, has been not well executed. And if that, again, you just said, Drew, if that team can't defend and Rene is not stealing games for them, maybe they're trending downwards a bit. What I've seen, I haven't been overly impressed.
Well, at some point in time, and as I'll let you answer this, at some point in time, you expect Nashville's, their insistence that they haven't ever fixed their offense. At some point in time, it should catch up to them. I know you have Weber and Suter back there, and that really does patch a lot of holes.
Well, but not for long, probably.
Not for long. One of them's going to be is a free agent.
And, Suter. Suter's a UFA after the season, and Weber's an RFA. And Rene was the other UFA, I believe. They already signed him to a long-term deal for too much money.
Right.
And so the question is, will they be able to sign one or both or neither? The more time goes, the more I think it's probably maximum one. So we'll see.
Especially a team that doesn't have a big budget or anything along those lines, generally speaking. The final game last night, and just a dandy. Detroit at Chicago. Chicago 3-2 over the Detroit Red Wings.
Right. A huge win and... a great game. Two of the best teams in the Western Conference right now, I would say.
Two of the best teams. I mean, both deep. Detroit looks like a well-oiled machine. You can't take a night off against them. They just don't ever regress. It's unbelievable. Chicago's a deep team that can beat you from many angles. They're just so good. These two teams, as you mentioned, they're two best teams in the National Hockey League. So two of the best, if not the best. Mm-hmm. You can certainly make an argument. Jimmy Howard's been great this year. Crawford's obviously made a name for himself, I think, last year in the playoffs, and then this year, Marian Hossa's been dominant. He scored again last night. Jonathan Toews, probably the MVP favorite. He scored again last night.
On a penalty shot.
So, I mean, what do you say? That's a group. Oh. Those are two teams that have handed the Jets significant losses.
Those two teams, they play each other 10 times. Each team's going to win 5.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And they played, they both for the Jets, I mentioned, but Detroit beat them 7-1. And Chicago beat them, was it 5-3 or 6-2 or something?
Early in the year, right at the beginning of the year. Second game the Jets played, I don't recall exactly what the score was.
Hard to shut down those teams. They have too many options and too much firepower.
Exactly right. Let's leave it there. Let's go to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to shift into Jets-Leafs mode probably for much of the next hour. We're going to break down the game in as in-depth as possible. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. This segment is brought to you by the newest sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're thrilled to welcome him aboard. He's David Carr of Monopoly Realty. And for if you're in the need for the top of the top quality real estate agents, give David a call. David Carr a call. Say that 10 times fast. David Carr a call at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty. 230-6129. Gentlemen, Jets Leafs gets underway. 6 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty with the call. Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show gets underway at 5 o'clock on Mr. Lube Game Day. Let's look at the two forward corps here. And the Jets are a little banged up front. We know that they're missing the guy who's sort of taken over as their top line center, that being Brian Little. We're expecting him to be placed retroactively on the injured reserve, just in terms of it's a numbers game, with Randy Jones coming off of the injured reserve for tonight's game. he won't play, but he's coming off the injury. The Jets, how did they, you know, where do you see the Jets forwards matching up with the Leafs forward? What's the big advantage one way or the other? What's the key to shutting down the Leafs forwards?
What's the one key for the defense to shut down the Leafs forwards?
Yeah.
Aside from the obvious prevent goals. I guess you start with the number one line, which has been really hot. Evander Kane's got 3 goals in his last 2 games. Blake Wheeler's been really hot, so obviously for Toronto, that's going to be the key. And as we mentioned on the morning show yesterday, Drew, probably the biggest key for the Jets' defense is to shut down the number one line of Tyler Bozak, Phil Kessel, who am I missing there?
Joffrey Lupul.
Thank you. That's probably the number one key for the Jets. I mean, the Jets probably have more balanced scoring right now, even without Brian Little, and we're not sure if Jim Slater is going to play. Up and down, it's a pretty close game. Like we said, they have identical records. Both teams can obviously score goals. I would say that the advantage, and we had Dennis Bayak on the morning show yesterday, he said that the Leafs have a pretty poor penalty kill, so if the Jets can take advantage of that too, I guess that would be a pretty big thing too, right?
Richie, what do you see as the key? You know, we know about the top line for the Leafs.
You know,
we know the way it's been clicking all year.
Drew, the Leafs are a team that, to me, you look at their forward core and you look at Phil Kessel, or whether it be Kessel, MacArthur, Bozak, Kuhlman. You go through the team. It's not a big team, so right there, it's not a size team, not a team that's going to push around your defense. And the Jets have a defense that doesn't, for the most part, get too pushed around. Although they can be, beat on the boards a bit there. But you think about it in that way, especially without Byfuglien. But you think about it this way: this team isn't that big, so it's a team that's quick. It's a faster skating team, a quick shooting team, likes possession a bit. I don't think it's a forward core that strikes too much fear into opponent's eyes. Phil Kessel, he's not a great passer. You want to take away his space, and that's easier said than done. But you actually get quick shots off, so you get a stick in the lane in front of him, and you force him to pass. You force him to give it up. And that's the key in terms of stopping Phil Kessel, and he's their best shooter. That's the key there. Now, in terms of some of the other guys, well, you know, a guy like Kadri likes to dangle a bit. So, you know, you get up in his face, and you kind of take away his ability to do that. You have guys like Connolly's a passer and Lupo's a shooter. They have a bunch of pieces, Drew. I don't find their pieces to be overly
threatening.
Yeah, intimidating or threatening, exactly. And I think you can stop this team fairly, not fairly easily, but one thing you have to do, and it's more, you know, again, easier said than done, stay out of the box. You look at this team, Drew.
Yeah.
5th overall in the NHL and on power play.
Right.
And, you know, you have guys.
And that was a big problem with the Jets' Leafs last game. Yeah. The Jets got in trouble there in the third period by taking too many penalties.
And right. And, you know, you look at this team overall, and points-wise, Drew, I mean, Kessel and Lupo have been driving the bus.
Right.
Bozak's a good passer. You want him out, you know, probably push him to shoot. Grabowski is a pretty good all-around player. But the other guys, I mean, again, there's no guys who really strike too much fear. You got to take away Fratton. Matt Fratton has a good shot. But if you were able to shut down Phil Kessel and Lupo, more so Kessel, he's an overall better player, then you are probably going to have a pretty good shot at winning tonight.
Well, how do you shut down Phil Kessel?
I just said, I mean, you take away his space. He's not a great passer, and he's not that strong. He's quick, and he likes to shoot a lot. You can't leave him open. You have to have a stick in front of him in the lane all the time so that to block that shot, to make him do other things, to make him get rid of the puck. Right, and he'll camp out there on the left side on the power play for the one-timer. You have to make sure that you rotate over on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Your forward or defenseman rotates over to take away that shot from him. Similar to kind of Brett Hall on that side. Quick shot. Likes to get it off on his off wing. That's what he'll do on the power play. In terms of on the, at evens, you want to just make sure that you're physical with him.
Physical, keep him physical to the outside and be right on
bottom. Well, not necessarily to the outside. I mean, to the outside, yes, but he's so fast that if he goes to the outside and comes around, he can create chances.
Sure.
But you want to be physical with him and make sure you take away his shooting ability. So, yeah, that will drive him to the outside many times. But if you take away the shot and you are physical with him, you can get in his head. And I think that's a matchup that likely you'll see Zach Bogosian play up against Phil Kessel, because Zach Bogosian is the team's probably the best all-around defensive defenseman. Second of all, he's a great skater. And third of all, he's pretty physical. So he actually matches up quite well against Phil Kessel. Now the problem, of course, is if Kessel's playing the right side on the first line.
Yeah.
And Bogosian is a right defenseman, that ends up being inverse and they're not actually on the same side.
Right, they're playing opposite each other.
But at the same time, I still think that you want to get your best defenseman out there. People move around the ice all the time and you can't just make it based on that thing, because the Jets' left side, whether it be Stewart or Hainsey or Oduya,
yeah,
that's the way, or Enstrom, excuse me, not Odia, they're going to slide Odia over, or Haintsy over to the right side. Those guys, probably especially with a little bit less so capable of shutting down a player of Phil Kessel's ability.
Let's look at the Jets lines. Let's switch over to the Jets side. I mean, we know that, like I said, they're going to be without Little again. Last game, Tim Stapleton moved up to play center with Kane and Wheeler. And, I mean, there was a lot of roster juggling going on without Slater in the lineup also. We're not sure. Slater's a game-time decision again. It's either going to be Slater or Cormier centering probably that third, fourth line. Do you like Stapleton playing center there with Kane and Wheeler, or would you like to see a guy like maybe like Burmistrov moving up there?
Well, Drew, he had a pretty good game last game, so I think, I mean, there's no reason to believe why he couldn't do a pretty good job. He's been pretty good here the last couple of weeks. So I wouldn't expect that many changes. It was a little bit surprising because they kept the Ladd, Antropov, Wellwood line together.
Yeah.
And maybe you'd think that somebody would move off of one of those lines, but I don't know if they necessarily love it. I mean, he did do well, though, and maybe they didn't get as much offense as you'd like, and obviously the game was scoreless till overtime.
Oh, I'll be candid here. I think Burmistrov needs to be moved up to a more significant scoring role.
And
I think he needs to be up there. So you think, again, this is a long-term, short-term thing. We're getting, I think, a little bit foggy in terms of this team overall. Teams perform really well, and obviously they're, what, sixth or seventh right now in the standings?
Yeah.
How little that means in any event.
1 point to separate from, you know,
right.
sixth through tenth or whatever.
True. I mean, long-term, Tim Stapleton does what for this team? And long-term, what does Alexander Burmistrov do for this team? And it's not that based. It's a decision such as that is not that simple, but that needs to factor in significantly into the decision-making. I mean, first of all, he's a better player.
Yeah.
Let's be frank about that. And he's responsible defensively. He's pretty strong on the puck.
Yeah. Surprisingly strong on the puck.
There's lots to like about his game. He's an efficient scorer when he's put in scoring situations. And as his numbers, for the most part, a lot of the time, he was put into non-scoring situations, so he didn't perform. And when he's been in scoring situations, he's been pretty good. I think he needs to be up there, and I think he needs to be playing more. And I think you need to see what you got.
So you would you're advocating for Burmistrov taking on that bigger role, and then Stapleton can go.
Maybe, but as he made a good point, why do you have the Ladd Wellwood Antropov line together? I mean, how that line hasn't done much.
It's pretty clear though that Claude Noel likes the line, but I mean it's interesting because the Glass Slater Mietinen line wasn't having as much success as maybe Forsberg on the line. So Noel obviously likes that combination. So
yeah, I mean. You could kind of throw, you know, you've been playing well.
Yeah.
Right? But this is always a problem for a coach. You win 1-0. You don't want to break up the winning lineup or mix, but you only scored one goal. So there's two ways to look at it that way. I personally think, I mean, you look overall at this team, and I think it's usually Evander Kane or not much.
In terms of if Kane's going, you're winning. If he isn't going, it's hard for the other guys to pick up the slack in order to make it a victory.
I don't think it's that simple. I mean,
but I think for the most part,
Kane went 7 goals without scoring, and the Jets still won.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can simplify it to that. But I think for the most part, I think when Evander Kane is playing well, yes, the Jets will also have success.
Yeah, and he's
one of the key players.
He's going to drive the. See, to me, he drives the bus, and he did go that period without scoring, and the Jets did fare well. But I'm saying right now, overall, I mean. Has there been any line that you say, oh, it's been dominant that doesn't have Evander Kane on it? That's why I don't mind kind of switching things up a bit.
That's why I'm curious. I don't know why Ladd, Antropov, and Wheeler, Wellwood have been kept together for this long.
I like Burmistrov with Antropov.
Well, Burmistrov and Antropov really, at the beginning of the year, they seemed like they had some chemistry together. Yeah. Then, of course, Antropov went out with his injury, and they haven't really been put back together at that point. But those are the three guys together. Or when Antropov and Burmistrov are together, they both seem to play well off of each other. But we haven't seen them reunite since probably about at least a month or six weeks ago now.
Maybe you want to try Burmistrov with Antropov and Ladd today, and maybe you throw you keep Stapleton in that slot.
But you switch around the second line.
And you put Wellwood with Slater and Glass, or whoever's going to play there, because Slater probably might not play. And then, you know, you try and move around that way. I mean, you have guys playing different spots on their off wings, things like that. And I don't ever mind really, you know, coaches experimenting too much unless things are going extremely well.
Well, and really that Ladd Antropov Wellwood line hasn't, you know, torn the house down by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Ladd had 4 giveaways in the last game. Now, I don't know whether that's going to be a function of who he's playing with necessarily.
I think the other thing you have to talk about, as in Drew, I think one thing you have to talk about here is at some point in time, doesn't this seem to get Andrew Ladd going?
Yeah, I would argue. I mean, definitely. He's got, you know, 37 games played. He's 17 points.
That's brutal.
He hasn't thrilled me.
He's getting a lot of ice time, so I mean, like,
he's getting 19 minutes of ice time a game. His decision making, you know,
I'm not even concerned about that right now. There's been a lot of giveaways and things like that, sure, but I'm talking offensively. Don't you have to get him going? And I think you need to get guys. You know, I mix it around a bit to get him going.
Sure.
Because
maybe Burmistrov's
maybe not. But I don't think this Antropov Wellwood Ladd line is anything to write home about. I don't know why it's staying together.
It certainly hasn't thrilled me by any stretch of the imagination, that's for sure. Let's leave it there in terms of the forward line. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the Jets and Leafs defensemen. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day here on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined at MTS Center by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com. If you want some of the latest in fabulous Illegal Curve merchandise, go to the website. You can click on our merchandise link, and you too can look like Ezzy and I right now, sporting the fanciest Illegal Curve toques. A nice new present, post-Christmas present, if you will. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked. Well done. Gentlemen, let's look at the defensive corps for these two teams tonight.
Before we get into that, Drew.
Okay, Richard.
Can we talk about the Leafs' tremendous penalty kill?
Well, I wanted to save that when we discussed Ron Wilson and his contract extension.
It's part of the game tonight, and we'll talk about it later, too.
Okay, let's talk about the penalty kill, then.
Last in the NHL.
Last in the NHL, and it's consistently been at the bottom of the barrel in the NHL.
Yeah, so when we talk about the Leafs' power play, let's also talk about the Leafs' penalty kill. If the Jets get on the power play, that is an asset there, too, in drawing penalties. And another reason why, like, Burmistrov draws a little bit of penalties there, this Leafs penalty kill is brutal. And at some point, that needs to fall on somebody's shoulders, doesn't it? They fired the assistant coaches.
Yeah. Well, what is it about?
To fall on Brian Burke's shoulders for the personnel? Well, the personnel has changed quite a bit over the years. They brought in specialized players like our Freddie Schustrom, things to kill penalties. Now they have the roster as it is, and I still think it's a mishmash of talent. But you have defensemen on the roster, I mean, who have killed penalties before. You have David Steckel, who can win draws. I don't know at what point, who's taking responsibility for this brutal penalty kill. Like 4 years or 5 years in a row, they've been the bottom five in the league.
The answer, obviously, to your question is it appears as though nobody's taking responsibility for the brutal penalty kill. You know, penalty kill, I mean, you know, there's people who are more adept at penalty killing. But there's nobody that jumps out at me as ever being, you know, penalty kill specialists or anything along those lines.
Is it
a scheme thing? Is that why it's bad?
The scheme has changed over the years, so I don't know if it's a scheme thing. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a focus on practice. Maybe it's that. I don't know. Drew, but you have David Steckel playing about 3 minutes a game on the PKs, your top forward in terms of penalty kill minutes. The guy wins a ton of draws. That should be killing a lot of time off the clock. It shouldn't be that bad. It shouldn't be killing penalties at 72.5%. Do the quick math there. Your opponents are scoring at 27.5% of the time. So the Jets draw four penalties today. They should have one goal for that.
Sure.
And they should usually draw about 3 to 4 penalties a game.
Well, especially in, you know, the quote-unquote the new NHL where everything is a penalty at some point in time or another.
Right.
Like, I don't get it. Especially, you know, you mentioned David Steckel. He wins draws. He's one of the best face-off men in the NHL.
Which, by the way, Slater and Little both don't play tonight. Well, Little's not going to. If Slater doesn't play, the Jets got killed 60-40 on draws last game against L.A., might be worse tonight with a guy
especially
like that.
With David Steckel. Yeah. I mean, he should win 90% of his draws against the Jets team at that point in time. But, I mean, you win a draw on the penalty kill, and assuming that it's a clean draw and it goes back to whomever it goes back to and they dump it out, you're saving, what, 20%? 20 seconds, pardon
20, 30 seconds,
me?
Yeah.
20, 30 seconds each time you dump the puck out?
Yeah.
Just by his presence in the faceoff circle, it should improve your penalty killing percentage dramatically.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't. So, I mean, is it just... how bad would the penalty kill be without David Steckel is my question.
Well, I mean, how much worse could you get? That's my question.
Well, I mean, you can't
get
much
worse.
To answer
a question with a question.
You can't get much worse.
I don't know. And you look at this Leafs defense, and let's transition to the team's defense overall.
Let's look at the Leafs defense.
You know, Drew, you have an impressive youngster like Jake Gardner who can skate and move the puck.
They got him from Boston in the Thomas Cabrera deal at the dread deadline last year.
Cody Franson in a trade with Nashville for with Matthew Lombardi for, I believe it was, Brett Lebda, just a salary dump.
Just a salary dump, yeah.
A guy who can move the puck as well, but not very fleet of foot. You have a defense here, Drew, that, you know, has their... Nobody here is the all-around... I mean, Dion Phaneuf...
Playing far better than he did at the end of his stint in Calgary.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The captain of this team is averaging 25 minutes of ice time a game.
Yeah. I wouldn't confuse ice time with productivity, especially with the lack of options they have on this squad. But he's played better.
Yeah.
Carl Gunnarsson's been a nice surprise there. A left-handed defenseman, moves the puck, skate. He can kind of log a fair amount of minutes. But Luke Shen, what's his development? I mean, is his peak, to me, was always a number four defenseman, really. Never a first-pairing defenseman, more of a second-pairing defenseman. Franzen, you have the weakness in terms of the skating. And you can't really shut too many guys down. Nashville protected him significantly. Barry Trotz sheltered him significantly, as he. Jake Gardner, young player, can skate well, but you know, not strong enough right now to really handle the big guys on the boards. You guys got guys like Keith Ollie. I mean, this is a defense, again, another mishmash kind of thing here.
Are they building this team? Have they built this team in the last number of years just by sort of bringing in pieces and dropping them in without having a grander plan in place?
I think in the interim, yes. I mean, I think their development, they get Colborne, right?
Yeah.
They have Kadri now coming up. So they have some young guys coming through the system.
Right.
But in terms of defense, in terms of the current roster, I don't know.
It just seems like it is a mishmash on defense. John Michael Lyles, you know, was the guy they brought in from Colorado. He's been injured. He's on the IR at this point in time.
Komisarek is out too.
Komisarek is also out. But I mean, Komisarek, there was some talk that he was going to go down to the minors at the beginning of training camp. He's, I mean, far overpaid. You know, how do you fix this team, Ezzy?
I'm probably not intelligent enough to answer that question, but I think that you probably fix it by getting rid of a few contracts, I would say. But I agree with Richie. They have done some things to improve their defense by bringing in certain guys. And I mean, getting a guy like Cody Franzen too, he's pretty young, fairly young. But Phaneuf is the guy that you're going to build the entire team around, and he's played really well this year. But without Lyles there, that was a key guy that you also brought in, you acquired, and I would have to say that. You know, there's a lot that needs to be fixed, but I back to the penalty killing. I don't think that it's necessarily one or two guys that are going to solve that problem. I think it is coaching, and you know, I think that the Leafs, you know, you guys mentioned mishmash of players and stuff like that. This is just my opinion. I think that they're reliant on one line, and really. They're not getting balanced scoring, and I don't know what other team in the league has that big of a drop off from their top two guys. And I mean, a lot of people are really shocked that Lupo's playing this well, even though Lupo, if he can stay healthy, has been a really good player. So the defense isn't. It's you know, the Jets I think have the advantage in this game with defense. We're not really talking enough about Luke Shen. He really is. You know, one of the up-and-coming good young defensemen, his offensive abilities are a little bit limited. But, you know,
we haven't even
it really is what it is in this case. Komisarek, you overpaid for him. And,
yeah, exactly.
And Lyles is out. And so what do you do? Now you're expecting who, even though Keith Ollie's young and he's good, it's tough to expect him to go into your number three,
Tom with
Perry
right now,
and all that. So
you look at
he actually is a plane with
Perry. Yeah, and you look at this team overall. And as you mentioned Komisarek and Lyles both out right now.
Right,
both overpaid.
Well,
and the reason they get Lyles is because he's overpaid. They gave Komisarek the terrible contract. Okay,
right.
So you have two guys overpaid. Phaneuf maybe playing great, so overpaid right now.
Sure.
Shen overpaid for what he's producing. When you have so,
but in Toronto, overpaid is not that big a deal.
No, I mean, but it is. But because money that you spend on somebody is not spent on somebody else in the cap system. You have to going up to the top of the cap. So you look at this squad, and right now we're talking about the team on the ice. And on the ice, they're not that impressive. And off the ice, you think to yourself, wow, that's really not that impressive because of how much money they're spending on the back end. In the future, I mean, is Jake Gardner a nice pickup? Sure, he is.
Is he the answer to all your problems?
No.
Is there anybody in that organization? I mean, Nazem Kadri, we've been waiting for him to take the next step or become a regular NHLer for about the last 5 years or something along those lines. Is there anybody in that organization that jumps out at you? This is the future. This is the guy. You know,
No.
There's no Evander Kane, who's a blossoming 50 goal scorer.
That's right.
This is what they're stuck with.
That's right.
I mean, the only time they're going to be able to do any better is if they, you know, nobody's going there in free agency.
Well, you know, people would go.
When was the last time anybody went to pay him, Drew? Right. When was the last time a really top of the line free agent went to Toronto?
When was the last time one was really available and they went for him hard and they didn't get him?
Well, they went for Brad Richards, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, fair enough.
And he didn't go there.
I'm talking like, yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I don't think that there's. I don't think it's a.
But he is the going to the team that's a player away, and they're three players or four players.
They still made a run at him.
Yeah.
From all accounts, they still made a run at him. I mean, even if it would have been a stupid move on their part, which I don't think he's the answer to any of their problems.
No, I mean, you put him with Kessel, he could score a lot. But yeah.
But I mean, so they're still a one-line team. There's still a one-line team.
Tim Connolly, I mean, you just got a bunch of guys put together. And don't get me wrong, I think Brooks trying to get as much as he can out of the team right now. And especially he did this because you didn't have two first-round picks, so might as well try and be good with whatever you got because you don't get the benefits anyways.
Right. Now, hindsight again. I mean,
being bad. Benefits of being bad, of course.
Phil Kessel, was he worth the two first-rounders?
No, and he wasn't, and the second-rounder, too. Was he worth it? No. And Burke, while he might tell you today that he'd make the trade, he wouldn't make that trade again. But Kessel's played really well, and you have to give him due credit because he's played really well. Kessel's a very good player. Now, he's limited in some respects, but he can do the most valuable thing you need somebody to do, and he can score goals.
He's a 70-point guy. Is he a 70-point guy a year?
Yeah.
Does he have much more of a ceiling than 70 points?
Well, you know, if he gets 40 goals in the 70 points,
yeah,
it's more valuable than 30 goals in the 70 points.
Right.
And I think he's, you know, if he can get to the 40-goal mark with 35 and up, and he gets you 70 points, that's a heck of a player. And that's a first line. That's a good first line right winger.
I think last year he was 32 and 32. 32 goals, 32 assists.
I'll give him up a little bit more, but that's still first liner, Drew.
Oh, yeah.
So you're getting a first liner out of it, and those are hard to come by. But he gave up what ended up being a top 10 for, going to be a top line forward who's right now playing for cheap.
Tyler Seguin.
Right. Yep. Playing for nothing, playing for that $3 million entry level if he, you know, reaches all his bonuses. Dougie Hamilton, top 10 defenseman, playing for World Juniors Team Canada right now, a second rounder who's escaping my mind. So you're getting future assets. You didn't do anything in the meantime while those players were, quote unquote, could have been developing.
Are you wasting Phil Kessel's prime right now?
No, well,
yeah, that's a fair question, Eddie.
The thing
that's
is
a good question. I think.
You know, hold on to your answer. We got to go to break. We'll answer that question on the other side. Are they wasting Phil Kessel's prime? You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day gets underway with the Jets Leafs New Year's Eve Tuxedo Night Contest, 6 p.m. at MTS Center.
Drew, are you wearing your Canadian tuxedo tonight?
I am wearing my Canadian tuxedo tonight. I'm going to look fabulous. I must say that Laura is the most excited for the outfit. Laura, of course, being
your fiancé.
My fiancé. I've lost my fiancé.
So, Drew, we're wearing the Illegal Curve tuxedo. We're both wearing the exact same thing.
It's sweat.
Hold on, let me put my toque on
here. Put your toque back on there. Yeah, exactly. Sweatpants, an Illegal Curve shirt. And there you go. You rock that, and you're rocking the toque out already. That's a nice look, I must say. Before we went to the break, I asked the following question. Are the Toronto Maple Leafs wasting Phil Kessel's prime?
I'll try to answer it, and maybe Richie will have a similar answer, but he's a little smarter than I am, so he'll have a better answer.
But you're more handsome than he is, so it balances each other out.
I don't know about that. Okay. I think that, in a sense, his potential is being wasted a little bit, in the sense that he is in the prime of his career, and he's probably going to set career records this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the only reason why, really, you could almost say he individually is the reason why the Leafs are doing this well. He's having an MVP season.
Yes.
You can't take that away from him. He's all over the place. And two segments ago, Richie said the way you stop him with is you take the space away from him and you counteract that speed. And trust me, I bet it's a lot harder said than done.
Absolutely.
But you are right. That's exactly what you have to do. Phil Kessel is almost a similar player to Ovechkin. He's north to south.
Yep.
He's not really the type of guy that's going to go around the entire team. But I guess his center is Tyler Bozak right now. And if you put him with a Brad Richards,
right.
I think Den Kessel becomes a 95-point player. So I think that was the master plan. You signed Brad Richards to a 6-year contract,
put him together.
And then Richards and Kessel, you could almost win a cup there with those two guys. Really, that would be second to none really in the NHL.
You'd have a nice first line center and a nice second line right winger. This is the thing, Ezzy. He's 24 years old. Okay.
I can't believe he's only 24 years old.
Yeah, I know.
It's amazing. He's much older.
He was a huge guy, prospect coming out of the University of Minnesota.
Sure.
At times, actually, favored to be the number one pick. He faded over time, and he ended up being the fifth overall pick in the, I'm forgetting which draft, the 2006 NHL entry draft. Okay, so, yeah, but he's 24. And Hockey Prime, from the research and the reading that I've done, is about 23 to 26. Okay.
Yeah. And you did some stats on a legal curve that bared that out.
Yeah.
If you looked at even Gretzky's numbers.
The best players. I mean, yep. You're getting about 23 to about 26. So that can be extended a bit. Obviously, players take care of themselves, etc. But those are their prime years. So the question is, will the Leafs be, they're paying him a lot of money right now.
Sure.
Will the Leafs be that good team? And that team that makes it worth their while in acquiring Phil Kessel during his prime years? And to me, that basically would require them to be a top team in the next year or two, or three, even three.
Give him the benefit of the doubt and say three.
Even then, when he's 27 years old.
Yeah.
Is he going to be that player? I mean, sorry, is it going to be that team? Does anybody think it's going to be that team? Does anybody in this room, in the MTS Center right now, think the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to be in the Cup Final? Lots of things can change, but in the next 3 years. They're not going to be this year, so there's 1 year.
Right.
25 year?
I don't see it. And I mean, the question the person you have to ask that question to is Brian Burke. Brian Burke's going to actually join Rick Ralph in the second intermission of tonight's contest here on TSN 1290.
Now, he's getting paid 5.4 cap hit a year for the next 3 years. So that's the next. So for the next 3 years, meaning this year and the following two, after that, he's a UFA. So let's take that into consideration, okay?
Is he going to want to be on the Toronto Maple Leafs 2 years from now, 3 years from now, if he doesn't see a significant improvement in this team?
And will they want him? You don't want to get nothing for the guy, but will you want to sign him? Now he'll be at that point he'll be
27.
Do you want to give him a long-term deal from 27 to 31 to 32? You might.
And he's going
to
want the five.
Those are still
again.
Productive years. Don't get me wrong. But during his prime years, what's he done? And so, till his contract is up, what are you getting? And if you're not getting much.
And
then you have to think about it in the sense that you didn't know you're going to be terrible, but now you're going to compare it, I think rightfully so, to what Tyler Seguin will do for those years, and maybe a cheaper price or a similar price for the years that at least may contend with younger players. And when you put all those things together, they don't match up. And then you think to yourself, yeah, they probably are wasting his years.
Well, from the beginning of Brian Burke's time in Toronto, this was a team that should have bottomed out. They should have bottomed out, much like the Ottawa Senators did.
Exactly right.
And they should have rebuilt with a ton of young talent.
Yep.
And that's what Ottawa has. The Leafs have a lot of, you said,
absolutely.
Pieces.
Totally agree.
Pieces that don't necessarily make any
sense.
It's all
pieces. Connolly, piece, Loophole, piece.
When they acquired Connolly in this offseason, Connolly's a talented guy.
Yeah.
Yep. Injury prone. Yep. Never could get it together in Buffalo because he was always banged up. But, I mean, yes, he's a nice player and he's got a lot of talent, but what does he do? Who does he fit with? Who does he play with?
Drew, you're
he
right.
Needs to play with people.
You're right on Connolly. And the thing is, when you look at the Joffrey Loophole acquisition, okay, they signed him to 2 years, $4.2 million.
No, they got him. He was already signed.
From Anaheim. Yeah.
They got him from Anaheim, so he had 2 years left on his contract. And I think you'd have to agree that that was a good acquisition. He's worked well with Kessel, right? And Loophole is another guy, first-round draft pick, and had a lot of success with the Ducks. But you're right. He, I think, is there's more left in the tank. I think Connolly, his best years are behind him, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that old either, 27 or 28. But with his injury problems, I think that's another guy that you have to think, okay, where is he going to fit in? Is he going to stick on our team as a third liner? Or he's not really enough to take us over the next step. And back to your point about rebuilding.
Connolly's 30 years.
Okay.
I can't believe Connolly's.
Okay,
I mean,
okay.
Exactly,
it was a few years.
But
okay, he's still not a guy. Still, Richards is also 30, but Richards is a guy that you throw a 6-year contract at, and you know he's going to be damn good for 6 years.
And he's
years.
More reliable in terms of injuries. Let's look at their roster. Let's just look at their roster for a second, okay?
Okay.
Let's look at how they were acquired. Phil Kessel's at the top here, okay?
Yeah.
CapGeek here is a reference point, capgeek.com. Phil Kessel, they acquired for two first-rounders and a second-rounder, Dougie Hamilton Kessel.
Sagan.
Sagan. No, those players weren't drafted already. They were drafted by Boston with those picks. Signed him to a long-term deal. You got Tim Connelly, two-year UFA deal, 4.75 a year. I probably wouldn't give him more than 1 year, but a two-year deal is not going to kill you on the cap, okay?
Yeah.
And now they have a ton of UFAs after next season, so they'll have room to go splurge on a player, which they probably have somebody in mind, if not many people in mind. Joffrey Lupo, they get him because he's overpaid. Right?
Yeah.
They take him along with Gardner in that trade for Beauchemin.
That's right.
You know, as part of taking Gardner, you got to take off this terrible contract. Terrible at the time.
Which has worked out okay for them.
Sure. But how the players were acquired, right?
Right.
Matthew Lombardi, same situation as Lupo.
Well, Matthew
you're
Lombardi.
You get Franz in, and you're taking a risk, and you can put him on IR, and you can eat the salary. Okay?
He had concussion problems when he was Nashville's really big free agent signing two years ago, and he was felled by a concussion, didn't play anything last year.
You signed MacArthur.
Yeah.
Okay, you signed McCarthy after his year in Atlanta.
That's right.
Okay, Buffalo to Atlanta, and then Atlanta here. You signed Kobe Armstrong to a three-year, $9 million deal
from
UFA.
From Pittsburgh.
You acquire Grabowski, which I believe was actually Cliff Fletcher's trade from Montreal.
Montreal, yeah.
Kuhlman is a draft pick.
Yeah.
Kadri is a draft pick. Bozak is a free agent out of college.
Yeah.
Who they wanted that was really, really sought after. He's actually a UFA after next season as well. Matt Fratton, I believe, is a draft pick. He's a UND guy. I got to check in whether or not he was a draft pick. Stecco, they traded a draft pick for. Colton Orr, they give a terrible contract to. $1 million a year. Yeah,
Colton Orr is not worth $100,000 a year. Never mind.
But I guess the question is, Drew, where are the draft picks there?
They haven't, and this is something we've said about the Leafs for a while now.
Kuhlman.
And Kadri, has he developed like they want him to? They expected him to?
No.
And how much of that is the team, the organization's responsibility for jerking him around from the start?
I don't know. Maybe that, Drew, but I don't still think he's that good. Kuhlman was a second-round pick in 2006.
And to take nothing away from Kadri, I mean, he played on the Canadian World Junior team. I think he's got talent to a certain degree. I think you guys would agree that he's not going to be a first liner.
No.
And you can make an argument that he's not a good enough goal scorer. He might even be a third liner. So in that sense, they don't have a stud. He's not a Vander Kane.
Right.
He's not even Brian Little. And if you look at the Jets, littered with first round picks that they've drafted
and developed.
And the Jets are doing an amazing job of putting their players
in
a position
to
succeed.
Does is keep costs under control. Because you don't sign UFAs and give them big money. Now, Fratton was a fourth-round pick in 2007. Kadri might be that second-line player. Maybe he is similar production to Brian Little. Maybe upside kind of thing, 50 points, whatever it may be. But overall, you're drafting that guy, I think seventh overall in 2009. I was at the draft there. The problem with him is he's too handsy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that makes sense to the listeners out there. He dangles a little bit too much. And in the NHL, you have to be able to do things quickly and not turn the puck over. And, you know, he'll develop a bit. He's not going to be a bust. He's going to be a National Hockey League player. But the question is, what kind of a player is he? What kind of a player was available? Now, Scott Glennie was drafted right after him, a Brandon player. Hasn't really developed. And probably slower, developed more slowly than has Nazem Kadri. But players behind them have developed a little bit faster. And so there are things to take into account here. But if you don't develop your talent, if you don't draft well and develop your talent, which they haven't done in years.
Well, who was the last top line player the Toronto Maple Leafs developed?
Drafted and developed?
Drafted and developed. Not acquired, not free agency, not took off in
the
a bad contract.
The last player, well, it's nobody on the team now because Kessel was obviously not drafted by the Leafs.
Can you think of it? Because I can't think of it. I mean, Gary Lehman. I mean, I'm kidding, but it's been a while.
It's funny. It's been a while since the Leafs have had anybody that's led the NHL in scoring, and I know that. Matt Sundin was not drafted by the Leafs.
No, he was a Nordique guy.
You've got me surprised there. I think James Reimer is from Morwena, Manitoba.
Yesterday's Budweiser first period code word, of course.
Right, and I mean, he is the guy that I think you have to be the most excited with on the Leafs. And I realize he struggled.
I don't want to talk James Reimer. We'll talk about him after Michael Tracos. Michael Tracos of the National Post is coming up next. Let's go to commercial. We'll come back with Michael Tracos, and then we'll talk James Reimer. A lot more to come here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day here on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live from MCS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host,
now,
Drew Mandel.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program from the National Post. He's been a guest of ours before, Michael Trakos. Michael, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy New Year in advance.
Absolutely. To you too. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. All that good stuff. You're on holidays now, so we do appreciate you joining us.
Hey, no problem. I always love talking hockey, whether I'm working or not working, you know what I mean? It's kind of one of those jobs where even if you're not actually on the clock, you're still following and watching the Leafs and watching the NHL.
Well, that's
so it's kind of funny when people say, oh, you're on holiday. So it's like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm still watching hockey.
Exactly. It's a high-class problem to have, as they like to say.
Exactly.
Leafs-Jets tonight, 6 o'clock here at MTS Center. You know, the buzz in the city is obviously palpable. First time we've seen the Leafs in Winnipeg in about 15 years or so, of course. From your perspective, this Toronto Maple Leafs team has got off to the great start. They struggled a little bit since then, sort of fallen back to the pack. You know, what do they need to do to get back to the form that they had earlier in the season?
Well, you know what? I think a lot of the problems stem from goaltending right now. And it's kind of funny because a lot of attention is being put on or placed on James Reimer, obviously Manitoba-born guy. And I think he's got pretty much all of Morwena, the tiny little town there, at tonight's game. And really, he's just been average, if that. And this is a guy who, a lot of the Leafs' success was hinged on Reimer last year. And for the first part of the season before he suffered that concussion, or I shouldn't say concussion, it's concussion-like problems.
Yeah.
The Leafs are so afraid to say the C word, so I don't want to say he had a concussion. He had a neck or head injury that may or may not have been a concussion, but since he's come back, he's just been, I don't think he's been the same guy. He's allowed, I think, 3 or more goals in 7 of his last 10 games, and against Carolina the other night, they had a 2-goal lead in the third period with about 10 minutes left, and he let in some real questionable goals. So, yeah, I think a lot of success right now depends on their goaltending situation, and what a great place if James Reimer can get back on track for tonight's game against, I guess, as close to his hometown as you're going to get.
Michael, how much of that responsibility, though, at the end of the day in terms of the Leafs netminding, falls on Brian Burke for leaving and trusting Reimer to be the number one guy and not providing him with too much support between the pipes in terms of maybe a veteran netminder on a short-term deal?
Yeah, no, and I was on the Leafs in the summer just because Reimer hadn't even played a full season, and they were going with him as a number one. And then the number two was a guy, Jonas Gustafsson, who's battled injuries in the past and really hasn't proven himself as an NHL commodity, never mind a starter or a legitimate backup. So, yeah, I had serious questions going into the season. I would have liked for them to bring back a J.S. Giguere or someone of his ilk, someone who's been there, done it, and isn't necessarily going to carry the load for 50-plus games, but would be there if Reimer is going through some tough spells, because right now he's going through something, and it seems to be maybe more mental than physical. And he doesn't really have that other guy in the dressing room to lean on and say, hey, you've been here before. What did you do when you were in this kind of slump or when things just weren't going right? He can't talk to Jonas Gustafsson about that because Jonas Gustafsson is worried about just staying in the NHL for his standpoint. He's only been there a couple of years himself. So, yeah, I would have liked for them to go after someone like that or a Jose Tate or someone like at least it's a veteran presence in the locker room, never mind so much a guy you're going to lean on for actual games.
Michael, we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the program, and I'm not saying this with any anti-Toronto bias because I strive to hit the big lights and big money of Toronto one day. So I'm still struggling it out here on the prairies. So we were just talking about this a little bit. When was the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs drafted and developed a number one line superstar? Because we were stumped.
Drafted and developed a forward you're talking about?
Yeah.
Their top-line player. When was the last time they developed their own top-line player?
Are we going to go back to the Wendell Clark years?
We might have to.
It's been a while. Yeah. Nick Antropov, maybe.
And he's a Jet now, so.
Yeah, if you want to consider him a top-line player, and I think that was basically out of necessity more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's been a while, and is this a segue into the Nazem Kadri
If you'd like it to be, it can be, yes.
Because I have serious doubts as to whether he's going to be a number one center or a number one or even a second line forward in the future. But, Yeah, this team's had some struggles, and part of the problem is they haven't drafted in the last few years. And this goes back before Phil Kessel, before the Leafs giving up draft picks for Phil Kessel. This is a team that seems to not care too much about draft picks, and I think that's part of the problem where you're not drafting and developing. And the other problem is the team's been so bad that they've been rushing their guys into the lineup so quickly. And, you know, we're finally starting to see some patience. A guy like Nazem Kadri has spent some time in the minors, and a guy like even Joel Coburn, who finally didn't draft him, but they're basically developing the kid. And he should be in the lineup right now. And then past years, he probably would be in the lineup. But teams, for all its warts, this team does have a lot of depth, and they're allowing guys to grow and develop in the minors. And that's really the recipe for success in the NHL.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube, game day on TSN 1290. Jets-Leafs gets underway at 6 o'clock. We're joined by Michael Trakos of the National Post. Michael, one of the things we've also been discussing regarding the Leafs today, and it's been a discussion point for the last number of years with this team, is the, how do I say this politely, awful penalty kill. You know, and we said, you know, you got a guy like David Steckel now who's going to win, you know, 80% of the faceoffs that he takes somewhere in that vicinity, and
a high amount, Drew.
Well, he's one of the best faceoff guys in the league. And you win a faceoff, you dump the puck out usually. How can this penalty kill still be as terrible as it has been for the last number of years?
You know what? I still don't get it, because this goes back even before Ron Wilson. Paul Maurice's last year here, the team still had the worst penalty kill, and the power play was terrible too. So this is just, it's an epidemic, I guess is what you want to call it, because this year Ron Wilson has tried every single guy on this PK unit, and prior to the season they hired a guy, Greg Cronin, who was known around the league as a penalty kill guru, had done wonders for the Islanders penalty kill years ago, and in college he was just outstanding in special teams, and he sits above me right in the press box, and I've never seen a guy throw a telephone as hard as he can. Because I guess he's getting a bird's eye view of the what's going wrong or what's going right, and I don't know what's going right these days. It's not just one thing, and I was on the radio with another station a couple of days ago talking about
it. You're cheating on us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. And it's not like it's screen goals or it's a failure to box out or something like that. It's like every single goal seems to be different. And I got to go back to the goaltending. I think if you have better goaltending, that kind of clears up some of the problems. And another thing is just stay out of the box. And this team has taken a lot of penalties. I don't know exactly where they rank right now, but it just seems like if you have the worst penalty kill unit in the NHL, you maybe play more disciplined.
Michael, you know, there's a lot to, you know, frankly, a lot to not like about the Leafs recently, I guess, if you're a fan of Toronto. But can you give us an overall kind of evaluation of Dion Phaneuf, maybe from the time he came to Toronto to where he's at now? I know earlier in the year, Ron Wilson went out and said he's one of the best, if not the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. I certainly
By a country mile.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's right, the country mile. I certainly don't
not
share.
Just not just the best, but like, he's so far ahead, you couldn't even see him.
Yep, I'm sure he believes that in his heart of hearts. How would you evaluate Phaneuf, and maybe can you give us a little bit of an idea of if you think he's come along, and if so, how far he's come along?
You know, I think Dion Phaneuf is in that same category as like a Mike Green or a Brian Campbell. Guys who are going to...
Overpaid?
Overrated, overpaid. No, but guys are going to put up points, and they're not going to do a whole lot for you defensively. Mm-hmm. And it's a little tougher with Phaneuf because he's wearing the C, and he's logging the most minutes out of any Leaf this season. And I don't know if it's justifiable because the other night against Carolina, he was on for almost every goal, and just he takes a lot of gambles where you're kind of going, yeah, you should probably know better there. You probably shouldn't be pinching in that situation. And I don't think you're going to get a strong defensive effort out of Dion Phaneuf over the long haul. But what you're going to get is a guy who can put up some points, who can wow you with some big hits. And if he can live with some of these mistakes or vices that he's got, he's going to be a pretty good defenseman. I think he's overpaid at what he's getting, but I think pairing him with a guy who's going to be more responsible, and they've been putting him with Carl Gunnarsson and now Keith Ollie, And I think that's probably the right fit because both of those guys aren't going to take a whole lot of chances and they're going to be defensively sound. And I think that's what you got to do with Sanofi. You got to surround them with guys who are going to take care of their own end, and you're almost going to live with what Deion Sanofi can and cannot do.
Michael, I want to bring up something else that we talked about earlier in the show. I keep bringing stuff up earlier in the show. I'm a pretty nostalgic guy. I'm wearing a Nirvana T-shirt right now. Drew asked us if we thought Phil Kessel's talent's being wasted a little bit, or more so his potential's being wasted. And I said it's possible, but without Phil Kessel, the Leafs won't be doing as well as someone with a Toronto Maple Leafs poncho walks in the building. Do you think Phil Kessel's talent's being wasted a little bit in Toronto, or what are your thoughts on that?
Specifically his prime, Michael.
His prime.
Yeah, I don't think he's being wasted here. I think he's actually he's basically the core of this team. Yeah. Without Phil Kessel, you're not going to get any of these wins that they've gotten.
Yeah,
and
I agree with that.
I think with him and Joffrey Lupo, I think you've got somewhat of a pretty good top line, and I think you've got one of the stats-wise, there you go.
You had to follow me up. I can barely put five words together. So,
but you've got one of the better producing duos in the NHL. And Kessel has been hot and cold in his career, and right now he's kind of going through a bit of a cold spell. The other night he didn't even get a single shot on that. So, yeah, I don't know if he's being wasted. If you're a Toronto management coach, you're hoping that's not true because this. A lot of your success hinges on this guy. You gave up so much, and I understand where you're going with that. I think Kessel is probably better suited as a secondary scoring option necessarily than the guy who's going to be carrying the load. But, yeah, for what they gave up, they really need him to be a superstar. And, yeah.
And hasn't he been a superstar this year? I mean, I think you can make a strong argument he's the Hart Trophy winner at the halfway point.
Ooh,
I don't know about
really?
That.
I don't know. I see so much of him. I see so much of his game that I don't like, and there's obviously the goals and the wrist shot. They're just incredible, and I think he's probably paying a little bit more attention defensively than past years, but hey, during this rough spell that the Leafs have been going on right now, he hasn't been their best player or hardest-working player, and I think that kind of speaks to whether or not you're going to be a Hart Trophy candidate. I think the guys like Jonathan Toews or those kind of heart and soul players, those are the guys that when your team's not going, they kind of dig a little deeper, as they say. And Kessel, I'm not seeing that out of him. So, yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more of a gritty effort from the guy. And obviously taking more shots would be good, especially going in those dangerous areas, which when he's struggling, he just kind of floats on the outside. So, yeah.
And that's kind of always been his MO, Michael. And you look at this team overall, and you say you're Brian Burke, and they have the same record as the Winnipeg Jets right now. What's his, thought process, at least in your opinion, moving forward into the, and I guess we're about, I guess, less than 2 months away from the trade deadline now. Is this somebody who's going to be buying? Is this somebody who's going to be, and I realize more of the season needs to, play out, but is this team saving picks? And I know you said they really don't value picks too high. Is this team saving picks and kind of just going to ride out what they have? Or are they going to maybe try and make a run? Or are they going to sell a bit? What's his thought process?
You know what? I think when they get some bodies back, and Mike Komisarek is the guy who's injured, and John Michael Lyles is out right now. Once they get those bodies back, they've got a real glut of defensemen, and a guy like Cody Franzen, who's still fairly young and he's on RFA status, I think he's the perfect candidate to be moved for a more proven forward. And I think a lot of prospects, and I don't think you have to give up necessarily draft picks, but. They actually do have a lot of guys in their system that they can move, defensemen and forwards. So I could see them buying a bit, and especially if they're this close to a playoff spot. And God knows, it's been like 6 years, but it feels like it's been forever since the Leafs have been in the playoffs. So I think once you're this close, I think you've got to maybe pull some moves and ones that are probably going to maybe hurt you a bit in the future. But if you can get a guy like a Joffrey Lupo, where someone's a bit older, still has some years left in them, and can do something offensively. I think that's what the Leafs really need right now.
Michael, in addition to his Red Ryder BB gun, Ron Wilson did get his contract extension. Why? Why give him that extension for the year? What has he done to prove that he is deserving of another contract from this organization?
I don't know. He's got photos of something. I don't know.
Okay. Well, in that case, how is he going to use his Red Ryder BB gun? Let's go to both.
You know, it's only a one-year extension, and that's the thing I keep telling people. It's like, if you got a 4 or 5 year extension, or even a 3 year extension, I'd be going, really? We're stuck with this guy for another 3 years, but 1 year means fine. He can finish out this season. If they don't make the playoffs, I think you just eat that contract and you got to replace him. So it's a bit of a reward, I guess, for, well, let's face it, this team's above the playoff line. And when you're talking about Toronto, it's all about baby steps right now. And the fact that they're still in a playoff picture come January, I think that's something to be proud about, I guess, if you're in the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. That being said, 1 year still gives them a bit of motivation where, let's see what he can do in the playoffs if he can get there, and let's see what he can do next year, and maybe try to get a 2 or 3 year extension.
Michael Trakos of the National Post, as always, thank you for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Happy New Year to you and yours. Enjoy tonight's contest.
Hey, you too.
Thanks, bye-bye. Michael. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Thank you.
Mr. Loop Game Day, puck drop, 6 p.m. between the Jets Leafs. More after these commercial messages.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. Big thank you to Michael Trakos of the National Post for joining us. If you are out and about in downtown Winnipeg and want to become part of the live studio audience here at MTS Center, we're broadcasting from the atrium at the corner of Portage and Donald. Come by, say hello, pick up some Illegal Curve stickers that we have available.
Yeah, you know, a few people, I think it's funny, a few people don't know that we're broadcasting live, so they'll come up to us and start talking to us. So I'll just give them an Illegal Curve sticker or maybe an Illegal Curve toque off of my head. I'm not going to give them your toque. Yeah,
that's license.
Yeah, that's license.
License.
But, you know, there's a party to the left of me, party to the right of me. There's a party around the MTS Center.
And you're stuck in the middle?
It's Y2 Jets.
Y2 Jets. Anyways, well played.
Drew, are you going to talk about the toques we're giving away today?
Of course. If you send us your tweets at Illegal Curve, and the best tweets, you know, we'll send you out some Illegal Curve swag. We'll send you one of our new toques. You can go to illegalcurve.com, click on merchandise, and you can check out the new toques. We have them for both men and for women.
Right.
So they are our fabulous new product here from Illegal Curve. Follow us on Twitter, like I said, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Goaltending is going to be an interesting matchup tonight. The Jets have had, as Izzy and I have documented all week when we were hosting the morning show, the Jets have had fabulous goaltending in the month of December. You take away that Detroit game, and the Jets have had a goals against average of 1.5.
That's like saying you take away the McDonald's and the cake I ate one day, and I weigh, you know, 5 pounds less.
That's fine. If you keep it in there, the Jets' goals against average has been under 2 and a save percentage of about 930. You take that Red Wings game out of there, it's been a 1.5 goals against average and a save percentage of 970-something.
Right. And
no, pardon me, 950-something. 953,
Drew,
I believe.
It's funny. Drew's crunchy numbers over here. I feel like we're analyzing the TSX or something right now.
953 save percentage if you don't include that Detroit game in the month of December.
What about if you include the breakfast sandwich you ate this morning? How much do you weigh?
It has nothing to do with the save percentage. Why do I do this?
Okay, we're going to stop throwing Drew under the bus.
Unfortunately, for 5 minutes, you might.
Unfortunately, though, we do have to talk about the Jets goaltending because it has been that good. And of course, you can't throw away those games because if you did take away the Detroit game and you did take away the stinker right before the Christmas break against the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Jets would be close to almost a top 4 seed in the East, which is crazy. We've already talked about the fact that they're only 4 points behind the Panthers, but if you give the Jets 4 more points there, then they are in the Southeast Division lead. But the goaltending for the Jets, and I said this, I think has been A+. And I might have went a little bit far, but I'm going to stick by it. I think Andrei Pavlik is having a Vezina-like season. And I guess you have to factor in the few...
I'm going to interrupt. I think you're out of your mind. He's been good.
He has been unbelievable. And if you take out a couple of games, he's got a save percentage of 930, 940. I mean, that's Dominic Hasek-esque. And I realize there's a guy by the name of Tim Thomas that's having a pretty good year, and there's a guy by the name of Henrik Lundqvist that's having a good year, and you throw in Jimmy Howard and all those guys. But Andre Pavlik has been unbelievable, with the exception of maybe two, three, four games.
Well, I will say this. He's been better in December, and obviously you pick and choose which games have been better. You're going to skew the numbers. But I will say this. The team has played significantly differently after the month of October, which I think they've bought into Claude Noel's system. There has been a clear change in the style of play this team now utilizes, and that's up the boards, north, south, all those cliches, but it's true. They play a very simple game. They play their 1-2-2 well. They do lots of things well. But Andre Pavlik as a whole, and the season is as a whole, not in just portions of seasons.
Of course.
Now, granted, the most recent may be more of an indicator of what's going on because of the system change. But he's at 9-11 save percentage, just one stat. But, I mean, you're talking guys around him. I mean, you're talking a lot of guys above him. Now, taking into account every goal he's played, he's 41st in the National Hockey League in save percentage. Vezina-like? Not my opinion.
He's had a Vezina-like December.
A Vezina-like December. Chris Mason also been great. He's played against teams. And not only, you know.
Yeah, if I could, I would give Chris Mason the Vezina.
I know that.
The illegal curve Vezina. Yeah, it doesn't count for anything.
No, it's a cheeseburger. But no.
Which as he actually ate.
Took a bite of.
It's a wrapper of a cheeseburger.
Right, he took a bite of. Yeah. But, in all seriousness, you have Mason, who's played three games against Carolina. But he plays against LA the other night. Plays a good game.
Yep.
Collectively, they've received very good goaltending. And that's been a significant reason why they've had such success in December. Now, there's many reasons, but that's a significant reason.
Then you look at the Leafs, and, I mean, it's James Reimer, the local boy, and...
And we are expecting Andre Pavlik to be in net.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't received the official confirmation.
I can put it simply in terms of the Leafs. You have Jonas Gustafsson, who's played 17 games, James Reimer, who's played 16. Now, I'm assuming they've played portions of games together with guys being pulled.
Well, and Reimer was out for 6 weeks,
you have,
of course.
Yeah, Scrivens as well. But you have Gustafsson and Reimer. Gustafsson, save percentage, .898. Reimer, .899. Now, I don't care how you spin those numbers. They're bad.
Yep.
And you can't win in the National Hockey League with sub-900 goaltending. You look at Tampa Bay last year, prior to getting Dwayne Rolison, they were getting sub-900 goaltending. Look at how good they were after the fact. I'm not saying the Leafs are the Lightning if you get a good goaltender in there, but a new netminder, or better performance from their current netminders, such as the hometown boy, James Reimer, will go a long way in terms of the team's overall success. But it's simple, guys. You cannot win in the National. Look at the goalies who are up there. Hiller, Ward, all under 900 this year. Even Miller. Miller's just above it. But Hiller and Ward, look at their teams. Are Carolina and Anaheim are done?
Yep.
They're both done.
Of course they've had bad. I mean, I know it hasn't been strictly their goaltending that's been their problem. But let me ask you this about James Reimer. You always like to see a local boy do well and all that stuff.
Yep.
Was he ever really that good?
Well, he had spurts. And my problem was this. Maybe he was that good. But in my opinion, Brian Burke didn't know for sure that he was that good, and neither did Ron Wilson. So if that's the case, why not insulate him with a veteran netminder? They certainly didn't have the confidence in James Gustafsson. Jonas Gustafsson, excuse me.
I don't mind giving him a contract. 3 years, $1.8 million, that's fine. It's not going to hurt you.
He earned it.
I didn't mind it. Just you have to insulate him.
Yeah, you have to give him a. If he's going to struggle, or as young goaltenders tend to do,
of course, like Toronto.
There's no nights off. You can't struggle in Toronto and live to tell about it.
But last year, what happened? And Brian Burke and Ron Wilson would say that themselves. Last year, when you had Jonas Gustafsson and J.S. Jaguar, remember him, when they went down and he came in, he did an amazing job. And when James Reimer came in, it was almost like he got the first couple of wins, and it was like the talk of the town.
It was.
The James Reimer came in from the AHL.
But is he?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you'll admit that it's different to come in with no expectations and play well than it is to come into a season as the number one netminder.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. And last year he got 20 wins in 37 games, great save percentage and goals against. But I would have to agree that if you're not getting good goaltending and your defense isn't number one and you're not stealing games, it applies to the Winnipeg Jets. It definitely applies to the Anaheim Ducks, and it definitely applies to the Carolina Hurricanes. John Michael Lyles, no John Michael Lyles, no Komisarek. You can say whatever you want about Komisarek. I think he's got a bit of a bad rap. Defensively, he's pretty solid, and you need those big defensive guys.
He's overpaid.
Guys.
You know what? But I always
he's
find
overpaid.
He's overpaid, but it's not his fault.
No,
it's not his fault that Brian Burke overpaid him. No, it doesn't.
Because Brian Campbell is doing pretty well in Florida this year.
Yeah. He's overpaid, but that's not as a player. What do you say? I don't want that much money. I only want $5 million. I don't want $6 million or whatever it is. It's not his fault. Yeah, sure, I'll take $6 million. But don't expect a $6 million player because you're too stupid to analyze the situation properly.
Right, Drew, and if we're having a conversation, towards the trade deadline about what moves Kevin Cheveldayoff might make, a guy like Johnny Oduya or Nick Antropov might be in the conversation.
Yes, of course.
But Nick Antropov and Johnny Oduya are playing amazing hockey for the Jets right now. And I mean, you can't take that away from them.
No, they're still over. I mean, Johnny Oduya is still overpaid,
yep.
but he's at least performing up to a pretty good level, and it's not his fault that he's overpaid.
If he was getting paid
$3 million for that level, you'd be over the moon ecstatic. He's getting paid $4.2 million. Yeah. Well, you know, it's not his fault. He's playing up to where he should play as a talented player.
These are veteran guys that fill in certain roles. They have a certain offensive responsibility. They get the job done. They're key players. When they're not in the lineup, you struggle, but they're also not guys that you're expecting to take the next step. Guys like Zach Bogosian, guys like Brian Little, guys like Evander Kane, those are the guys that have to increasingly improve their numbers offensively, and for the most part, most of those guys are doing that.
And that's why there's a lot of hope in the Winnipeg Jets land. Let's leave it there. Let's take a commercial message. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the Ron Wilson extension. Mr. Loop Game Day here on TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.IllegalCurve.com. We're asking for your best tweets. We're going to send out some Illegal Curve prize packages to those who send us great tweets today.
Hey now.
Vosby30, send us this tweet, and it's a Happy New Year, great show. Pavlik is the Jets MVP this season. He created a T-shirt especially for tonight's Jets-Leafs game. It's got the Maple Leafs logo, and it says, Losers since 1967. So I think that's...
That's funny, Drew, because you have a shirt, Loser, since 1981.
Ouch! Ouch! That's harsh. That was mean, Richard. What kind of, Happy New Year attitude is
that? I'm
going
to come to your defense. Instead of, you know, doing our regular two-on-one, ganging up on Drew, I'm going to come to your defense here. You do a great job of hosting. You're not a loser. If anything, I'm the loser for not telling you that I love you every single day.
This is the awkward segment on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No, that's good to hear from a fan of Illegal
Curve. Vosby 30, yeah.
You know,
that's a great T-shirt.
There's been some great signs, and there have been just... I think there's actually even a green guy at Jets games now.
Really?
Remus. If you look in one of the front rows, there's even a green man suit. So I'll say it once and I'll say it again. I think we have the best fans in the NHL right now.
Oh, I don't think there's a competition right now. And tonight, I think the atmosphere tonight's even going to be that much more special. Looking forward to it. I actually get to go to the game as a fan, so I'm looking forward to that. I'll be up there in the 300s cheering the team on from my season seat. So I'm looking forward to donning my Jets gear accordingly and engaging in the heckling. Is it going to be Phaneuf or is it going to be Reimer? Who's it going to be? Is it going to be all of them?
Won't be Reimer because of the home title. It'll probably be Phaneuf.
I was going to say, I don't think you can possibly boo James Reimer because I think all 150 members of his family are going to be in attendance. So
I remember once in the olden days, the Jets were playing the Dallas Stars. And I remember sitting about three rows behind Grant Ledyard's family, and it never occurred to me that the reason why they were cheering for him so loudly is because he was, of course, being a Winnipeg guy.
Down the street from my dad, he grew up.
Yeah, everybody was giving them the gears throughout the entire game. They're like, oh, right, he's a Winnipegger. I forgot about that.
Has he used mixed coffee with your fingers?
I couldn't find a stir stick.
Wouldn't expect anything different, really.
Nope.
Ron Wilson got a contract extension about 3 weeks before Christmas. It was announced on Christmas Day. We asked Michael Trakos why he got the contract extension. I'll flip that same question over to you two and see if you can come up with a good answer as to why he was deserving of a contract extension.
I think anybody who says he's deserving of it is probably... Ron Wilson's
wife.
Yeah, it's probably biased. But I will say this, looking at the Leafs roster, a ton of their players, especially at forward, aside from basically Phil Kessel, come off the books at the end of that season. And I'm wondering if... Brian Burke is lining up Ron Wilson to see what he can do with this group, and if this group doesn't work, which it likely won't, then he can just get rid of everybody at once, and he can start afresh with maybe a Carlisle, and then bring in all these free agents and just start anew. That's my only thinking behind what he possibly my only rationalization for the decision. I mean, Ron Wilson hasn't coached well enough to me to be deserving of any form of contract extension. And at least, why would you not wait until maybe he makes the playoffs and he does something of substance, as opposed to signing him when your team has been fading, you've been terrible for the past few years, they're still terrible in the penalty kill department,
so many things here that are flawed. That's my only justification for that.
As a quick question before I get your answer as to this, you and I are both sitting down. Why is Richard standing up right now?
I'm excited. I'm excited for the game tonight.
Richie's been way more excited than anyone today, and he's just standing up. And also, Richie's voice projects better. Richie's got quite the voice, and he wants to make sure that it comes across as clear and crisp as possible.
That's right.
And I think, you know, as Richie's director of corporate communications, I think
have I been usurped?
No, he's my personal director.
Ezzy is your director.
You're the Illegal Curve director. Director of Corporate Communications.
Yes. I understand.
Just for today, though.
Okay. Very good.
This operation's going straight into the ground.
Ezzy, why is Ron Wilson getting a contract extension?
He's getting a contract extension. We all know that he's Brian Burke's boy, Richie. Their relationship goes back to the Anaheim Ducks days and the USA
Does
hockey
it?
Days.
No.
Well,
he was in San Jose.
It goes back to the days when he was with the Anaheim Ducks.
When they
Ducks.
Played college hockey together.
No, but it goes back to the days when Burke was with the Anaheim Ducks and the... USA Hockey.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
and all
yes,
that.
Yes. Not,
they were
yes.
never together
that's
in
right,
Anaheim.
That's right.
But it goes back to that era. He's got the team playing well right now. I mean, nobody expected the Leafs to be as well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, the Leafs are doing well. Let's leave it at that.
No, they are.
The Leafs are in a...
Overall.
Overall, the Leafs right now are doing well. And
when was the last time the Leafs were in a playoff position on December 31st?
They haven't made the playoffs since the lockout. So if they make the playoffs this year, that in itself is a feat.
It's amazing.
They're finally going to use their parade route? Is that what you're going to say?
It's amazing what I won't even say mediocrity. Poor production. Yeah, the prolonged poor production will do for your expectations.
The last coach to get the most out of the Toronto Maple Leafs was Pat Quinn. You can't argue that. Pat Quinn was one of the greatest coaches for that team. And I mean, you know, in those days when they had Darcy Tucker and Shane Corson and Cujo, they were a tough team to play against. They always beat the Ottawa Senators, who were a much more talented team,
yep.
You know, in the early 2000s, Drew. But, you know, Ron Wilson got, like Michael Tracho said of the National Post, he said, it's 1 year.
It's an unnecessary 1 year. And if you want to give him that extension, give it to him at the end of the year when he's proved more. It doesn't really make any sense why they would have done it now.
Let me ask this question. And I think it's incumbent on the coach to develop this. Can you pinpoint something that this is this team's identity? You know, do they have an identity?
No, I don't think they do, but I'm not so sure. Yeah. You know, that's a fair question, Drew. And you can pin that on.
Happy New Year.
You too. You can pin that on. We have some guests here who are giving us a Happy New Year. It's very heartfelt, I have to say.
Yeah.
But back to that, Drew.
Oh, a bottle of champagne.
Wow.
they have an identity.
But this is the thing. And, you know, some would say, okay, but look at the team Brian Burke's mishmashed together. But how do they have an identity? Well, you look at Ken Hitchcock. Every Ken Hitchcock team has an identity. And does this Ron Wilson team, this particular one, have an identity? And I don't know the answer, and I don't think they do. I don't think they do. And I think that's partially due to Burke, as I mentioned before, but I think that's also partially due to Wilson. And I just think overall, this operation hasn't been smooth. I don't think there has been a plan in place.
That's it.
And without that plan in place, it's hard to execute in the National Hockey League. I mean, this is not the day and age prior to the lockout. You say new NHL, it's been now 7 years, almost 8 years. but you know, 7 years, Drew. But you look at the new NHL, and you look at the old, you could take a player like Phaneuf and... Sure, you're getting him for nothing, but the Phaneuf $6 million what he's making this year is cutting out of the $6 million you could be paying somebody else. So you can't just take all these contracts on without there being ramifications for it.
It's because they're not all. If they were all 1 year contracts, then it's fine. But they're not. You're saddled with these contracts for years going forward.
You know, Richie mentioned Ken Hitchcock, and everybody knows about Ken Hitchcock and how good of a coach he is. He won the Stanley Cup with the Dallas Stars, and he obviously is He's a staple of Hockey Canada. They always go to him to be the coach. Since Ken Hitchcock took over the St. Louis Blues, how well have they done?
Exactly.
I mean, 15 of 24 games or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, the St. Louis Blues are in that tough Central Division. That's a guy that deserves a 3-year contract extension.
Who's a better coach, Ron Wilson or Randy Carlyle?
That's a really good question, Drew. I personally would say Randy Carlyle. I think Ron Wilson's been doing... I personally think Ron Wilson's burnt out. I think he's coached many years. It doesn't mean he can't go and coach again and continue to coach the Leafs. But, you know, he coached in Washington, coached in Anaheim, he coached in San Jose, coached in Toronto. I don't think there's much of an extended break between those times. And
he, you know, frankly, you coach in Toronto, it ages you, and I'm not trying to be funny even here. It does. It's a very stressful job, and I think he's a little bit burnt out. Randy Carlyle, Drew, you know, he rubs some people the wrong way. I think he's a hard guy to his teams are hard to play against. For their lack of discipline, they show an amazing amount of heart. If I had to start a team right now and I was picking between the two, I would pick Randy Carlyle. Yeah. And the question is, as Ian, you go in, just leading into that, if Carlyle's available, which he clearly has expressed an interest to get back in the National Hockey League, and he's not going to resurface here, then why again? Why give him the extension? To quell? I mean, if Ron Wilson can't deal with the distraction of his extension amongst the many other distractions he has in Toronto, then you have bigger issues.
Do you believe him an extension? Do you really think that's a distraction, though? Do you think the players are like, well, he's a lame duck coach, so we're not going to try as hard? It's such a red herring of an argument as far as I'm concerned.
It is, and it says more about the players than it does the coach, probably. But maybe Burke thinks that. But essentially what you're doing is I forget how much they paid him for that extra year.
Yeah.
But are you buying can you buy something better for $1 million and
yeah, but the money is insignificant to them. I mean, the truth is the money is insignificant to that organization.
And Drew, right now, okay, the Leafs are in a playoff spot, tied with the Jets, and like we said, that's pretty well for a team that didn't make the playoffs last year and has missed the playoffs for the last 6 years. And right now, Phil Kessel is arguably playing the best NHL hockey he's ever played, and that's under Ron Wilson. And he's got Dion Phaneuf going and all that. But you could argue that Phil Kessel was their best player last year, too, so that's not that much of a feat.
You could argue that he's just their best player, period.
You could make an argument. But if you look at Randy Carlyle and the way he had an influence on Cam Fowler's career, the way that he's convinced Timo Salanti to come back year after year. And Timo Salanti said that himself, and he loves playing for Randy Carlyle. And he was obviously disappointed when Randy Carlyle was fired. But he has found a way to get the most out of Cam Fowler. Corey Perry had an MVP season under Randy Carlyle. The Anaheim Ducks have a Stanley Cup under Randy Carlyle.
That's right.
The results speak for themselves.
Right.
And unless the Leafs make the playoffs this year, You can't make a very strong argument that Ron Wilson should come back the year after next year for another year.
Even if they do, what's this? So they lose in the first round and get killed? This is something to write home about?
Yeah.
True.
Let's go to break, but before, and we're going to talk about this after the break. Leafs just placed Tyler Bozak on the IR.
And he's a Saskatchewan boy. Yeah, they might have had some family coming.
There's
going to
be a different center on that top line then.
So we'll talk about how that impacts the Leafs lines ahead of tonight's Jets-Leafs game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Mr. Loop Game Day on TSN at 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Before the break, we just got word that Tyler Bozak was injured. He's been placed on the IR. He had been centering the top line between Joffrey Lupul mm-hmm. and Phil Kessel. From what I understand, he went shoulder first into the boards here during the Leafs practice yesterday at MTS Center. So obviously this is going to result in a big change to the Leafs lineup for tonight.
Sure will.
How do you see that void being filled? How do you see that transitioning accordingly?
And Bozak's a really good passer, Drew. I've always liked his passing ability. He's more of a passer than a scorer, although he's put up points this year, as you just mentioned. So yeah, that's a significant loss, obviously, with the other injuries that this team has now. And up the middle, you're weak, and everybody moves up a slot. And everybody moves up a slot, then you might, I mean, that Leafs fourth line is not very good to begin with. So that might be something, if they have to shorten the bench a bit here tonight, that might be something the Jets can take advantage of.
Any idea, any best guess as who's going to fill that spot? The Leafs didn't skate today here at MTS Center. There was no game day skate for the Leafs. A little surprised about that, but no game day skate, so you couldn't see who they were going to match up the line, so it's really going to be, you won't know till the start of the game who's going to fill that role.
I do not know that, but I think in any event, we know that the player who's going to fill that role was a player they didn't find worthy of being in the lineup prior to that.
Right.
So it can't be anybody that significant. If that's the case, their fourth line is going to be extremely weak today, and their other lines aren't that great to begin with. So this is another reason why the Jets should take tonight's game. I think the Jets, to be honest, I think are the better team. I think that they are at home. They're rested. They got yesterday. They didn't play on Friday, so there's no the back-to-back issues here.
Right. Neither did the Leafs for that.
Neither did the Leafs. Yeah. But I mean, you're the home team. You're coming in. This team has lost maybe their number one center right now.
Yeah.
They have other injuries. The goaltender is struggling, and you're rolling. The Jets should win this game.
You win this game, you finish 10-3-1 in the month of December.
That's right where he said. Is that not what we said?
Even if they lose, I think 9-4-1 is okay. You win 9-4-1, you're doing pretty good. It's 75% or whatever the exact numbers are. But if you can get to the double digits, you go 10-3-1. 21 points in the month of December. They've taken care of business on home ice, like we said they needed to be a threat going forward this year.
Yep, and they started getting it going on the road with the game against the Colorado Avalanche. So I think it's an interesting point that Richie raises. Bozak has done a good job, and he is a pretty good playmaker. He's got size, and it's unfortunate because he is a prairie boy, and he would probably have some family or at least some people watching it more closely because of the fact that it's in Winnipeg. But Mikhail Grabowski had some injury problems, and he was a guy who was on the top line, and Bozak kind of earned his role, so it might be him. Yeah. And then you've got Steckel, who I guess he gives you more size, but limited in his ability to make plays, and he's more of a kind of a checking center. So it's either him or Tim Connolly, who's had limited success this year. We've talked about Tim Connolly, a guy that they were expecting to either be on the top line or in the second line. Yeah. I mean, Tim Connolly wasn't brought along to be a David Steckel. I mean, that's actually
paying $4.5 million for a guy who's got 6 goals right now.
I know.
He's not a scorer, Drew.
He's got 11 assists. What are you paying him for?
That's the issue.
He's underachieved, it's going to be Grabowski.
And he's been relatively healthy for him this year. Yeah. I mean, he's played 25 games already. Normally, he doesn't play 25 games in a season.
And it's funny. Arguably, that's where the Leafs' strength is up the middle.
Yes,
when you bring in Connolly and you bring in Steckel, a guy like Steckel, would actually fit in really nice on the Jets. However, with Jim Slater in the lineup, Slater is better than Steckel, and I would argue that Slater offers more than Steckel.
Yes,
with the exception of maybe the size. But it'll be interesting to see if Slater's in the lineup today, because getting back to the line combinations and Richie's point, I don't think Alexander Burmistrov cannot be on the top two lines, and I think with Burmistrov playing with Blake Wheeler and Evander Kane, that line is more dangerous. Stapleton is a guy that can be good on that fourth line, but now Claude Noel has decided he's played too well that he's earned it and he can't be on the fourth line. So the Jets have a few decisions to make. Patrice Cormier, only got 6 minutes, I believe, in his first game back.
Yes,
and he's playing center. They've moved Thorburn over, even though Thorburn was doing well in the faceoff circle, and they had tons of problems last game. And they're going to have to figure that out, because they played the LA Kings, and Andrei Kopitar, Richie, absolutely dominated whoever he faced in the faceoff circle. And I believe the Jets had something like 8 or 9 games, 8 or 9 players take faceoffs, and only a few players were able to fill the void of Jim Slater. Brian Little was getting better, but
exactly.
That it's going to come down to that too. When you probably consider that this isn't going to be the type of game where teams are going to take a lot of penalties. It's probably going to be a hard checking, tough game, but probably a game where the first goal is going to have a huge impact.
Right.
Let's talk about Patrice Cormier. We saw him for the first time in regular season action on Thursday against the Kings. I thought he brought some energy to the line. I thought his 6 minutes were an effective 6 minutes. I didn't think there was anything to write home about, of course, but I thought he was... I don't think that Coach Noel could have asked for much more from him than what you saw.
Yeah, Drew's first time up, he just got called up. He wasn't sure if he was going to be in the lineup, obviously, the pregame.
Game time decision.
He couldn't really move out there, but... Drew, he's an active player. He's not the most smooth skater, but he works hard. He can get on the forecheck. He can be physical. He adds some spunk to the team. A little bit of sandpaper, as Pierre Maguire likes to say. I like what he brings to the table. It's a little bit different than some of the other players, and I like the opportunity to see him play. Now, he played 6 minutes. He doesn't have the best hands, but he puts the puck on net. He can score a bit. I like him as a player. I like to see him. I like to see the young guys get a chance there, and overall, I didn't think he looked bad at all.
No, it didn't look out of place. you know, it didn't look out of place. I mean, I thought, it was a perfectly reasonable effort from a guy playing his first game of the season with the big club.
This team doesn't hit. I mean, the Jets aren't a very physical team, and that last game was physical, and I think he helps in the physicality department. I think Evander Kane playing with a chip on his shoulder helps in the physicality department. Zach Bogosian engaging helps in the physicality department. You know, this isn't a very physical team, and Blake Wheeler's not physical, and Atropov's not physical, and
Burmistrov's surprisingly physical.
And that's why we've been, you know, such big proponents and fans of the GST line, because you've got Tanner Glass, Jim Slater, and Chris Thorburn, and really you've got a lot of versatility there. I mean, Jim Slater and Tanner Glass, and once again, we're not sure if Jim Slater is going to play tonight, but he's not going to be out for that long. Mm-hmm. But it is important because of his impact in him not being in the lineup, even in previewing tonight's game. Tanner Glass is a great penalty killer. He's put up career numbers, he was signed as a guy that was going to be doing exactly what he is doing, and he's doing, I think, an admirable job. And he's leading the Jets in fights. He can stand up for his teammates. But that line, you've got that physical presence. That's the one line that Claude Noel can put out there when you need to even check a team's second line.
Isn't that what you want from a third and fourth line primarily?
Yeah, yes.
Or at least what Coach Noel wants from a third and fourth line, knowing that any shift played against those two lines is a shift that the other team can't relax on.
Taxing.
It's taxing. It's, we say
pun intended.
Pun intended, but it is. I mean, those guys go out there and they do the dirty work and they put a body on you.
Yeah.
And at the end of the 45 seconds, when the opponent goes to the bench, they're like, okay, that's a shift where I know that I have to be I had to be aware of at all times.
And I'm worn down a bit because I'm beginning. I'm getting hit and I'm getting driven to the boards, and that hurts. I mean, players. Everybody knows. I just played hockey before. You fight, you get pushed into the boards. So you hit somebody. That's a tiring exercise.
It's the law. Every time you get bodied, and every time you might fall to the ground because you've been bodied or whatever else, it wears you down.
And
by the end of the game, that's an opportunity for the other team. An opportunity for the other team to take advantage.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, when you're a team like the Winnipeg Jets, who right now, they're heavily dependent on that top line. And that top line, because Brian Little's injured and Tim Stapleton is on that line, has been surrounded. It revolves around Evander Kane and Blake Wheeler, the two hottest Jets. And Tim Stapleton's done a great job. Burmistrov's done a good job. But when Brian Little comes back, we expect him to go back on the top line. But when you're really heavily dependent on one line, mm-hmm. and the Jets are actually doing a good job of being dependent on one line, but not getting success from other lines, I think that you need it to be like that. And I think when you look at the Anaheim Ducks, they have gotten into a trap of being overly dependent on a line because that line is not doing well. When your line's doing well, it's all good and dandy. But the Jets have had a pretty good third and fourth line this year, and night in and night out, really.
They've been at least noticeable. Whether or not they're showing up on the score sheet all the time is sort of an added bonus, but they've been noticeable and they've been effective in taxing the opponent.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
The pun is the pun because it just happens to work that way.
Yep. And another point, too, I was just going to make. I mean, there aren't many teams, there aren't many Boston Bruins, there aren't many Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, that's kind of the Boston Bruins set a new precedent last year. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the Chicago Blackhawks had, the Taves, the Crosbys, and the Boston Bruins don't have that. The Boston Bruins have four lines. Basically, any line can beat you.
That's right.
And not
that's
many
right.
teams have that, and the Jets know that. And so what they're doing is they're getting the most out of it, and I think Claude Noel deserves tons of credit for putting confidence in guys like Tanner Glass to go out there and get the job done.
Agree wholeheartedly with your comment there. Mr. Lube, game day here on TSN 1290. Jets-Leafs gets underway with puck drop at 6 p.m. Brian Munns, Dennis Bayak, and Shane Knighty with the call. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5.
The Jets are the national game tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. All the big guys from CBC are also here. Jim Houston, Craig Simpson.
Glenn Healy.
This is the center of the hockey world tonight. And I'll tell you why it's the center of the hockey world is because all of a sudden that Canada-U.S. World Junior game became a lot less important.
Oh, wow.
We'll talk about that after these commercial messages. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Mr. Lube Game Day.
Jets and Leafs gets underway at 6 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3 o'clock. Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5. Worth noting in the intermissions tonight, first intermission, Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to join Rick Ralph. And in the second intermission, Leafs general manager Brian Burke is going to join Rick Ralph. So pretty much, as we've discussed many times before, you're listening on the radio right now. Take your radio dial and just rip it out of your car and just leave it locked right here on TSN 1290.
Take the radio knob off and listen to these three knobs for the next hour.
There you go. At least you include yourself as one of the knobs.
Yeah, well, of course, Drew.
That was nice of you. I thought that was quite sweet of you. Anyways, World Juniors. I'll tell you what, tonight was supposed to be the real big night, you know.
Did you see what happened with the Danish team after the defeat to Canada? They got suspended. Did you see that?
The entire team got suspended?
No, five players. Did you see this?
No.
I don't... This was really funny. After Canada defeated Denmark 10-2, a few of the Danish players found a podium or a kind of a table similar to what we're sitting at here, a media room.
Okay.
And a few of the Danish players found a microphone, and I guess there were some cameras around, and they were pretending like they were giving a press conference. I guess they were answering some questions from the media, and I'm surprised that you guys didn't see this, but they were pretending like they were disappointed that they lost and they were expecting to beat Canada, kind of joking around, pretending like, you know, they were doing a press conference.
I like that.
It was really funny. So the Danish national hockey team suspended them.
What?
And they didn't play last night.
More importantly, Ezra, how many Danishes have you eaten this week?
That's a good question.
I just thought I'd bring that up. I thought it was really funny, and it showed that they had a sense of humor, but I just thought I was going to bring that up. I wasn't sure if you guys saw that. They showed it on TSN last night.
I thought you were going to talk about like Keith Kachuk, Chris Chelios trashing Nagano hotel rooms.
Sort of. I wasn't quite sure where you were going with that, but I missed that. Much like the Team USA missed the entire World Juniors, apparently.
Yes, wow, and that's the story of the tournament.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's overshadowed how well Canada's playing. I think in the first three games, Canada is outscoring their opponents 95.
Who cares?
They're supposed to beat Denmark.
I know.
We're the best. 10-2.
I've never been so proud and patriotic as beating a team of Danes.
The Americans lost to the Czech Republic yesterday. The Czech Republic and their fist-pumping goalie, Peter Mrazek. I don't think I've ever seen a goalie fist-pump
52 saves.
More than that guy. And he didn't get the player of the game, by the way. They gave it to someone else. I don't know what game they were watching. But Peter Mrazek's been unbelievable. But the Americans with, you know, Charlie Coyle and all of these good players.
He was a big
Jared
part of
Tenorti,
the Brent Burns trade.
Brent Burns trade. All these guys. Jason Zucker, who was the captain. I mean, they did not bring it. And the fact that they're not going to be in the medal round is mind-boggling, because the two teams that we said that were the biggest threat to Canada were Russia and the U.S.
Well, never mind that. So tonight on TSN, Canada-U.S., it was supposed to be, you know, this was they set the schedule up, so this is the game. Who's going to win the pool? It's going to be Canada. The winner of this game is going to win the pool. Well, obviously, Canada's now won the pool. This game is now really, completely meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the Americans decide to pull a punch up in Piestany and get the Canadians thrown out of the tournament.
How do you do?
Yeah, that's isn't that the goose and the gander sort of thing? It's a goose that's what's a gander anyway?
It's a chicken and egg argument.
It's a goose that's had the old switcheroo pulled on it.
Well, we can talk about this till the cows come home.
Anyways, this tweet just from Bob McKenzie. If he prefaces it by saying if he's reading the IIHF World Junior site correctly, Canada cannot even play the Russians or the Swedes in the semifinal. Canada's going to play the winner, either the Czechs or the Finns, or
it's a one-game tournament.
Or the Swiss and the Slovaks in the semifinal.
It's a one-game tournament.
Which means Canada pretty much has a bye into the finals now.
Yeah.
I mean,
Roy McGregor's an interesting article up on the Globe Sports.com website about, you know, relevant to Winnipeg, and I think that's what we could maybe transition to for a second here.
Yeah.
It's Mark Scheifele's play and Roy McGregor, maybe the greatest hockey writer of all time, to be
very good, right? Very good friend of ours,
With the exception of Drew Mandel.
Of Drew Mandel.
I appreciate that.
He's talking about the need for Mark Scheifele to get going, and Scheifele, aside from, you know, those two goals, he's got an assist too, I think 3 points, but two goals late in the game they played against
Czech Republic.
Yep. Hasn't really gotten going, and that's the basis of the article. And if you're a Jets fan and you want to watch specific players, and that's lots of times that's what, you know, big NHL fans like to do with the World Juniors, Mark Scheifele needs to get going. The assumed to be number one center of the hockey team leading into the tournament hasn't necessarily played that well, and now it's just a short sample, and obviously there's a bunch of bad teams here and how much you want to take from it, but you want to see him get going, and if you're Kevin Chevalier from the Jets scouts, you're probably somewhat disappointed so far with his play. Now it hasn't been that many games, but you know, you want to see him excel.
Are you taking more? Are you looking at? I mean, it's a much smaller sample size, obviously. This batch of games versus how what he's, because in Barry this year, he's been terrific.
And his competition is probably better than the Danes.
Well, I'm going to say, the night-in, night-out games in the OHL that he's been playing, you're right. Yeah. I mean, the Danes, are, you know, with all due respect to them, and, you know, it's good that they made it to the World Juniors, and they're in the world group as opposed to being relegated and all that stuff.
And giving fake press conferences,
The fake press conferences now makes them my favorite team next to Canada. But, I mean,
we're doing a fake radio show right now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, right?
But, I mean, Mark Scheifele, you know, he's been good in Barrie, and that's really what you want more than, I think, than in the
want to see him play with the best players and against the best players. But, you know, you see what it is tonight. The U.S., aside obviously from them missing out on everything here, are a talented squad, and you would like to see how he plays against a talented squad tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, Richie, I think, you know, Roy McGregor makes a good point, and I think my argument would lie in kind of the point, within the point that you made. He did have success against the Czech Republic, and he got two goals in the third period. And those were kind of those bury the game type of goals.
They're also the same goals he scored when he was in Winnipeg, on the left side of the net, on the one timer, on the rebound.
Yeah, that's where he's going to make his living, by the looks of it.
And because the Canadian, I don't know about that. I think a guy like Mark Stone maybe more so. But Drew, I do think that Mark Scheifele is a guy. He's not the most talented skater, and that's why I think he wasn't a top 10. Overall pick on most people's boards, because I think Kevin Cheveldayoff saw that Mark Scheifele's hockey sense, his work ethic, you know, the fact that he's one of those natural snipers. I think he will get goals like that, but I think he'll also get a lot of type of goals in the slot, maybe less so because he's not the most overly physical player, and I think he would tell you that himself. He's more of the type of guy, and I think the playmaking side of his game will develop as he gets older.
I think his strength is, guys. I think it's the playmaking side.
Yeah, but I don't think we should get too concerned about Mark Scheifele. It's been three games.
We're qualifying it.
Small sample. And he does have to get it going, but when you consider, when you're beating a team 10-2, you know, I mean, what would it really matter if Mark Scheifele got one goal there? Would it really matter? I mean, I think
whole tournament so far.
I think you know, a game like Russia, maybe that under that stage, we'll say, okay, how does Mark
Scheifele
do?
Even the U.S. tonight is, because the U.S. talent is depth there.
Right. How does he
play against top talent?
And the thing is, I think, you know, we're watching. We were at the MTS Center, where we are right now, watching the Kings game, so we didn't get to watch the Denmark game.
Right.
So, I mean, but that game really was pretty meaningless. I mean, Canada, it was an exhibition game for Canada, let's be honest.
All these games have been exhibition games, though.
Well, Finland wasn't. Finland wasn't.
It was 9-1.
But it's still...
score it was.
Okay, but Finland was less so an exhibition game, if that makes any sense. But I think, you know...
We're doing degrees of exhibition games now?
No, but Mark Scheifele has been good in specifically one game offensively, but I think he has not done anything that hasn't continued his development. He's gone to Barrie and he's averaged 2 points a game.
I'm more impressed with what he's done in Barrie than I am
He's made the Canadian team, and he's on the top line. And sure, the points haven't come yet, but we've still got a minimum of one game left and two games left. And I think that he'll rise to the challenge, and I think we'll see him get a few more goals. I'm not Nostradamus here. But I do think that...
but you play Nostradamus on the radio.
Based on the way Mark Scheifele played in the preseason, and, you know, he did get a goal. He did have one goal in the 9 games he played for the Jets. I think he's clutch, and I think he's going to always be one of those guys. He's going to find a way to always get on the score sheet every second game, if not every game.
And, you know, he's second in team points per game behind linemate to this for the portion and teammate Tanner Pearson.
Yeah.
So there's obviously lots to like there. And we have to take that significantly into account. I mean, he's scored. He's his assists, obviously. He's, you know, he's got 13 goals and 23 assists in 36 games in Barrie, 19 games played. So very few games played as compared to his you know, teammates. Now Ivan Telligan, I think the Jets' third round pick from this past year, has, you know, played 5 more games and has 7 less points, but he's performed well, 29 points in 24 games.
They seem like they may have gotten something there with a third round pick in Ivan Telligan.
Yeah, and I my biggest thing is making sure that Mark Scheifele improves his skating.
Yeah,
I heard Kevin Prendergast say he's the head of scouting for Hockey Canada, that he thought Mark Scheifele was a very good skater. I tend to disagree, actually. I don't think he's a great skater. I think there's some things to like there, but he needs to refine certain elements of his skating, and without that, I think he's always going to have an issue against the National Hockey League talent.
But, Richie, it's funny, though, okay, guys? I mean, Hockey. I've always thought this, and I mean, I love all sports, and I mean, hockey is one game though. It really is a team sport, and I think that when you look at guys on the Canadian junior team, you look at a Mark Scheifele, you look at a Mark Stone, both Marks, coincidentally enough. Mark Stone.
Insight like that. Mark, you can't get anywhere else.
Mark Stone was a fifth round draft pick of the Ottawa Senators, and right now.
But he's older, though.
Okay, hold on.
These older guys always succeed better.
Right. But, I'm less on talking about development for specifically just Mark Scheifele, but guys like Mark Scheifele and Mark Stone, guys who aren't naturally the best skaters, but are hard workers, and they develop their all around game and the role that they're going to have on a team. And
but conversely, look at a guy like Brett McLean this year. He comes in here, he can score, he can do a lot of things, he can't skate, and that kills him. You watch his inability to get from. Now, Scheifele's not a bad, I'm not saying he's a bad skater, I'm saying I like to see him improve his skating. And it's still significant. The jumps from the OHL to AHL to the NHL are so big.
I do think, even though. I've watched Mark Scheifele a lot, even though he's only 18 years old. But, you know, we were there at the draft, and we've watched him in the preseason. We've watched Mark Scheifele a lot. And I'm a big backer of his, and I think the entire city of Winnipeg is hoping, you know, sky's the limit for Mark Scheifele, and I do think he has a bright future ahead of him. I see in Mark Scheifele the willingness to get better, and I don't think you can say that about every single hockey player. I think you can say that about a lot of hockey players, but I do think he has one thing as well, and he does have hockey sense. And I think it does take hockey sense to be in those spots, go into those open spots. When you're not Alex Ovechkin or you're not Phil Kessel, and you don't have that natural ability to be in spots based on your speed and that natural ability, but you have that hockey sense to say, hey, I'm going to go in front of the net right now, because what else am I doing if I'm not in front of the net? And I think guys like Mark Stone and Mark Scheifele, they know they're not the best skaters, but they find ways to get into those scoring areas, and when they get into those scoring areas, they take advantage of it. Their stick is on the ice, and they bury it. They don't waste those opportunities.
I think hockey sense is one of those, you know, it's hard to measure, but it is certainly important, because you see guys, I mean, and there's players in the NHL who are just so talented that they make the NHL, but they don't have the same hockey sense. Blake Wheeler, who I thought has played very well this month, is a guy who I think is a step or a half a step slow in terms of hockey sense.
Great skater, but it takes a second too long to make
just
a decision.
Just a second too long. Yeah. And when you're playing with the best players in the world, that's all it takes to make to have a guy right up on you.
Yep.
And that, but I mean, you know, I do think that Mark Scheifele's future is certainly bright.
Yep.
Whatever happens in the World Juniors, however it shakes out, his future is bright, and the Jets fans, you know, should have a good player on their hands for years to come.
Amen, brother.
Let's go to break. Let's leave it there. Let's go to break. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day. Jets Leafs underway at 6 o'clock tonight. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Mr. Lube Game Day. Jets Leafs gets underway at 6 o'clock. The drinking has begun a few hours ago, I think, for many people in this city. But
it's noon somewhere, Drew.
Whatever you do tonight,
folks.
Oh, wait,
it's noon in Winnipeg.
I can still drive home, Drew.
No, be safe. You haven't drank anything yet, so you can drive home safe. But whatever you do tonight, folks.
You're not safe when you...
Yeah, you're not that great a driver when you're sober in the best of times.
You know, I put Appletons in my coffee.
Don't kid.
No, I'm joking.
Don't kid. Whatever you do tonight, first and foremost, importance, be safe.
Yeah.
Don't if you're even questioning it, leave the car, take a cab,
there's
walk.
There's many cabs. Take the bus, walk.
Whatever you have to do, no excuses.
The weather's beautiful.
We gave away a bike on this radio station yesterday.
We need as many.
Call that guy up.
We need as many of our listeners back next week as we can possibly get. So be safe, 100%. Whatever you do tonight.
Only losers drink and drive, and only winners listen to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
There's spoken by the guy who once walked home on New Year's Eve. I believe it took about an hour.
I snowshoed.
Oh man, 6 o'clock Jets.
Do you realize that it's less than 10 hours till Y2 Jets?
You realize you're the only person in the world who knows what Y2 Jets is?
2012 is really Y2 Jets, and the reason why that is because in 2012.
Andy, what's your New Year's resolution?
my New Year's resolution is to
not eat Fruit Loops after having two double cheeseburgers would be my guess.
Yeah, let me ask you this. When you left the cheer for the hockey game and then you went to McDonald's and got the double cheeseburger.
You know, my
not a cheeseburger, but a double cheeseburger. Not one double cheeseburger, but two double cheeseburgers. Okay, that's fine. Because, you're hungry. The question is this. Why then go home and have a bowl of Fruit Loops?
Well, the problem is most people are rational people. I am not one of those people.
It's a fair point.
I don't usually make choices that quote unquote normal intelligent people make.
Like Farley on SNL.
So
may not be sound of sound mind. Or
to answer that question, I mean, there is no answer, and it was a terrible mistake. And as Chris Reed and Drew know, I was rather sick during that show, and they were.
Do you think it was the Fruit Loops or the cheeseburgers or the combination?
I think that when you...
Because when you first told us the story, you just said that you had two double cheeseburgers and then went to bed immediately.
When you coat two double cheeseburgers, and let's be honest, two double cheeseburgers aren't exactly... It's not exactly like eating
This is the decider before we move on to more important issues like 24/7, but did you eat at the chair?
No.
Okay. Let's move on. Okay.
I'm obese. Let's not kid ourselves. I have a weight problem. But I'm not that fat that I would eat at the cheer and then go for two double cheeseburgers and then coat it with Fruit Loops. So, it was a terrible choice. And let's just say that I'm sticking to salad today.
I would hope so. As much salad as humanly possible, but salad nonetheless. 24/7.
Yep.
I
watched episode 3 yesterday.
Yes, good. I watched it two nights ago.
Excellent. Yep. It was the third episode. The final installment is next week, of course, the Winter Classic coming up on Monday, which you can hear live on TSN 1290.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the Winter Classic is Monday. They'll turn that final episode around in time for, I believe, it's airing
on Thursday
this coming week. Well, we were off last week, so we didn't get a chance to speak about the second episode. What have you thought of this round of 24/7 as compared to last year's round of 24/7?
I'll go first, Richie, because I know that there's some people out there that haven't liked it as much, and we talked about it a little bit when we were filling in for Jay and Troy on the big show yesterday. I've liked it better, and this is why. And it's because the focus has been more on two teams, and I thought that the first season was unbelievable. They did a great job, and it happened leading up to the Winter Classic between two of the best players. But I think that, I know Richie's very high on the Rangers this year, mm-hmm. and right now the Rangers are in first place, I believe, and the Flyers are also up there. They just happen to be in the same division, but they have more points than Florida, who's currently in third.
Yes, that's right.
But they're both in the top four of the Eastern Conference, both teams that we expect to be going deep in the Eastern Conference Stanley Cup playoffs. So I've liked it more this year because I think that the two teams, to me, are more interesting. And that's just me. And I love the fact that a guy like Ilya Bryzgalov, who I realize Winnipeg fans have had their issues with because of his Woods comments, but I think for a guy like him, his personality is really shining through. And I think
it's interesting, isn't it?
There was a cool scene with his family.
Yeah.
And they were having dinner and he cooked a duck and his kids had a certain charm to them. I've really fallen in love with Ilya Bryzgalov's personality, and I think a lot of people feel that way too. And I think a guy like John Tortorella, you just see how intense he is.
Well, I'm cutting right there. As you mentioned, the Rangers are first overall in the East, 50 points.
Yep.
The Flyers are second,
a couple points behind.
At the third most points in the East, but they're fourth because of Florida. Mm-hmm. Now, that's, you talk about Tortorella. That's what I love. I love the intensity of both Tortorella and Laviolette.
Yep.
I also love the intense, visceral hatred these two teams have for each other. To me, it was Mike Rupp
telling Jody Shelley he's irrelevant out here.
That was great.
I mean, that was real.
Yeah.
It was also accurate.
Yeah.
But there's a hatred out there, and you listen to the coaches, you watch them, and to me, it felt like with Washington, you had the storyline of them losing and Boudreaux, not having a great time in terms of the coaching aspect, and Pittsburgh being so controlled. I felt like this was a little more old-fashioned, old school.
It's old school, but it's also fresh.
Look,
because
it's
happening right now, and you've got two of the best teams.
5 years
and
from
it's
now,
current.
The Penguins and the Capitals might not have a rivalry.
That's right.
The Flyers and the Rangers are always going to have a rivalry.
And you have the other parts, too. You have the fight with
Laviolette
and Ott. Yep.
You have Giroux, who looked visibly nervous about his concussion.
Yeah.
And talking, and it was, it's real, it's raw. There's so much to like about it, and I don't think HBO has ever put out anything that's bad.
Well, you were saying, we were talking about this off air. We were talking about how you've been off this week, and you've been enjoying your week off, and you've been enjoying it largely by watching HBO, random HBO documentaries.
You can't go wrong. They don't screw anything up. And this 24/7 piece.
Is this a documentary now?
Yeah, this is actually a documentary.
No, whatever happened with that documentary we did with Budweiser?
They didn't like the footage they got, Drew.
Well, that was when you weren't wearing a shirt. When you were wearing a shirt,
you were wearing that Fox jacket, that $20,000 Fox jacket that Drew claims was his aunt's or something.
Actually got
sure, Drew, we know what you do in your spare time. You go prancing around the town in your $20,000 fur
jacket.
He's jackets.
A fancy boy. I actually got that jacket from Jim Fox.
Yeah.
Good friend. LA Kings broadcast.
Yeah, no, good friend of the show. But, you know, back to in terms of, they can't do anything wrong. 24/7 is just it's so good. It's so real. And for the reasons, and as you talk about Brizgalov, one of the charming aspects of Brizgalov's personality is that while you have the intensity of these two teams and the hatred, he can remove himself, and he plays the game, but it's not the
clearly
end of the
day. Clearly doesn't take himself very seriously, and I can relate to that, me tell you.
I mean, Laviolette and Ott, and Ezzy and I spoke about this in the morning this week. Who did you think was in the right? Who do you think was in the wrong there, Richie?
Stand Steve Ott.
Yeah.
I can't stand Steve Ott. And you know what? There's no reason why Ott couldn't have let him walk, and they could walk amongst each other, and it'd be fine. He's one of those. He's like Sean Avery Light.
Steve Ott has developed...
Soon to be on waivers, you mean?
He's
a good player.
He's a good player. He's a hard-nosed player, extremely tough.
Yeah.
I mean, you ask anybody. I mean, you fight that guy, it's like fighting a bull. But the thing is, with Peter, not that
you
I recommend...
fought a bull?
I recommend anybody fighting a bull. But
you fought a bald bull in Mike Tyson's punch-out once, but I think that's about as close as you've come.
The incident between Peter Laviolette, and another thing, too, and there, I mean, we could really spend a lot more time on HBO, and I think that has been one of the relationships that the NHL has made with HBO, bringing these documentaries into the fold, has been...
The Broad Street Bullies one, too.
It's been such a great relationship, and it's produced great results. I think the audio, I mean, the video itself is phenomenal.
What
right?
about Steve Ott telling Giroux to check NHL.com? He's fifth overall in faceoffs.
I thought that was the best part of the documentary.
I love lost the faceoff and he's scoring.
And the fact that even though I had never seen the video of the Laviolette-Steve Ott incident, I didn't even see it on SportsCenter on TSN. I just missed it. But even without seeing the audio, when you hear the audio, and obviously there was, a couple of four-letter words that we can't say on air, but just the fact that basically what Steve Ott said when Peter Laviolette tried to pass him, and Drew, you mentioned this when we were on the air yesterday morning, it's that basically Steve Ott was saying, no, you're going to wait till we have to pass through, because they had to pass through, for those who haven't seen it, they had to pass through the same tunnels in Dallas.
Yes.
Same tunnel, sorry.
The coach and the opposing coach and the home team.
They both had to go through the same tunnel. So what Steve Ott basically said is just let me go through. And now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure that all of us here have been raised to believe that you respect your elders, you respect authority. And in that situation, now I'm kind of leaning towards Peter Laviolette's side. I think that when a coach, any coach, comes from behind you or beside you, it's kind of, common decency to let the coach go by. And I think now that I think about it, Steve Ott is a little bit in the wrong for making it a situation.
Laviolette would have just gone up the left-hand side of the wall, and it wouldn't have been any confrontation.
Right. Steve Ott probably won it on 24/7.
Of course. Steve Ott
knew where the camera was.
He became territorial. That's what happened.
Yeah.
He became territorial, and Peter Laviolette wasn't having any of it. And I don't.
I just want to know. I want to know all the other times the coach is there, whether they go with amongst the team or they wait. And if it's happened that they go amongst the team, it's just Steve Ott wanting to get on TV.
I don't necessarily blame him. He's got his moment in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. Neither player deserved to be suspended or anything else.
No,
there was nothing going.
Ryan Engblom was an eyewitness.
Well, yeah. He was the color guy.
He was the color guy for that game for Versus to be NBC Sports Channel.
Yeah. NBC starts. It'll be NBC Sports Channel starting tomorrow, I guess.
How could Brian?
No, it's in time for the Winter Classic.
But tomorrow's game's on NBC anyways.
But guys, how could Brian Engblom be there? I thought he lived between the benches at the MTS Center. We saw him after the game.
He was dancing
after the game against the LA Kings, and he was still there. We weren't sure if he has a bed there or if he pays rent. But no, he does a great job, and it would be
he does a great job.
It'd be pretty funny to hear what Brian Engblom says about that, because if you're there firsthand, it's a lot different than
he was literally. He was standing between the boards, and then right behind him was the pushing match.
Maybe we'll ask him about it in the press box.
Except he's going to be down between the benches.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
And his bed that you just mentioned.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Remember? And his dancing shoes, apparently.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's go to break. Worth noting, if you missed that Danish interview that Ezzy was referencing, Joe from Winnipeg emailed it to us, so I'll throw that up on...
Well, thanks, Joe. That's awesome.
I'll throw that up.
It's funny.
I'll throw that up on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve, so you can check it out there. Much more to come. Mr. Luke Game Day, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program, the final 30 minutes for us here on TSN 1290. Well, for today, it's a week-to-week gig here.
It's a week-to-week gig.
True, yeah. it's like day-to-day employment. It's like temporary employment.
That's right.
We have a temporary radio show.
We're day laborers.
If we didn't have Gary Lawless and Hustler behind us, I don't think we'd be around for much longer.
Gary
says
the Flyers are arrogant and living on an old rep.
He says that about what right now?
He sides like, with Ott because he thinks he texted.
He texted you about. Yeah. I'm like, in what? I'm trying to figure out in what context.
I thought Gary was texting us a description of himself. Just kidding. I mean, I absolutely love Gary. I love Gary so much that I went as him for Halloween. You guys know that. I offered to walk his dog when he went to Scottsdale. So, of course, I'm joking. And I'm sure Gary Lawless is going to come in here right before right before the H&L show. And Gary's going to come here and he's going to just, you know, make fun of me.
Gary, get here early so you can get your retort.
Yeah. Don't worry. He'll get it in. Gary always gives me a hard time. I love him. I'm just joking around. And he knows that. But the thing is, I think I've changed my mind. It's no longer Y2 Jets. It's Y2 Richie Pollock. I mean, the last week, you know, Richie has been in Vegas. And he's been back. And
we're going to stop you right there.
No,
we don't need any more description.
And you know how much I love Richie. Richie's my best friend. We're related. Actually, we're blood related, probably much to Richie's chagrin. But I love Richie. He always brings it. And, you know, he does such a good job on a legal curve. And that's what I'm now changing it to. It's the year of Richie in Winnipeg.
Thank you.
Are you done now?
The future mayor of Winnipeg, Richie Paul.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good to know. Let's talk about some injuries around the NHL right now. Every week there's a new superstar going down with a concussion. This week it was Shea Weber of the Nashville Predators.
I can't believe that hit wasn't suspended.
There's been a couple.
Mark Fistrick?
That's a former Moose, by the way, Mark Fistrick.
Yeah. I thought it was suspendable.
Yeah. Especially when tough defenseman, Mark Fistrick is punishing.
Suspensions are down, are they not?
They're down from the beginning of the year. That's
down
for sure.
From last year, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Which is odd because Shanahan, I mean, I thought he's done a good job for the most part, but I thought this was definitely a suspendable hit.
To be honest with you, Drew, I think for all the ability of him to crack down on these things, I don't think he's done maybe as good a job as people have given him credit for.
Really?
Yeah, I think
You don't think he's been more severe than Colin Campbell?
Has he? On Andy Sutton? That's an easy one. Don't go. Andy Sutton's an easy one.
Well, which one?
Hard ones.
Well, I mean, which ones have you really taken issue with?
I think Jack Skilly should have been suspended. I mean, now we're going back to the end of October,
yeah.
And I mean, if we're on the topic of plays where you can be suspended, you know what? In the last few games, you know, there have been many hits. I think what's happening now in the NHL, I would argue that hits to the head, we're starting to see an improvement. I think that we're getting better there. I think where we're not seeing improvement is hits along the boards. And those could be hits to the head, but hitting from behind, I've noticed the last few games, there have been issues. And I think that what's happening is we're starting to see mismatches. Don't want to get that confused with what we were talking about earlier, mishmashes. We're starting to see mismatches in size. And I think when you look at a hit like Mark Fistrick,
yeah,
and Shea Weber is a big man.
Sure.
He's a big boy. Mark Fistrick is a bigger boy than Shea Weber, and I think you're seeing that a lot in the NHL. Well, I mean, maybe not necessarily in height, but in size. Fistrick's one of the bigger guys in the NHL. Maybe I'm
He's 6'3", 230, according to Hockey Reference.
Weber's
I think Weber's right around there, isn't he?
It all depends on
the vulnerability and everything else. It all depends on where
Weber,
you make
6'4", 234. They're basically the same size.
It all depends on your contact point.
Yeah.
And
I thought the contact point was the head.
Yeah,
when you contact the head, it's a superstar offense.
A superstar shouldn't be distinguished from any other player, but you have to protect.
We all know that the superstars should be differentiated from every other player.
Maybe.
They're the superstars. Maybe. They're the ones that people are buying tickets to see.
I don't know. I just think that he had that ability to be a little more
harsh,
hard-handed with his suspensions. I think that he hasn't been soft by any means, but I don't think he's been as hard as people. I don't think he's been as hard with his suspension as some people believe or have been saying him to be.
Okay, I mean, it's a fair point. I mean, I've had no real problem with what he's done. Other injuries around the NHL, Christian Ehrhoff for the Buffalo Sabres. It was a bad contract.
That was last night.
Yeah, it was a bad contract when they signed. It's now worse. He's going to be out at least several weeks with an injury. I mean,
Buffalo happens when your ownership kind of takes the bull by the horns too hard.
Yeah. What's happened with Buffalo? I mean,
it's not an expectation. It's a mix. It's a mix that's put together. You know, you have guys going in and guys going out. Obviously down-yeared by Drew Stafford. Obviously down-yeared by Ryan Miller. Many factors, many distractions. They're good enough to pull it together, though, if Lindy Ruff is able to. But any talk about Lindy Ruff losing his job, I think, is completely ridiculous. Put it on the players here, and put it on the GM, and even more so the owner. I mean, Lino's been pretty bad.
Yeah.
Who do you want to sign him to a 6-year deal? Come on.
Well, I mean,
4.5-year, 6-year deal. Come on.
Which, I mean, look, it's good that the Buffalo Sabres have the money to spend, but it's like, it's, you know, just because you have the money to spend doesn't mean you need to spend it foolishly.
That's exactly right.
And that's the problem, and often the ownership, that's where they really come into play and really affecting things, is that's the big problem right now.
And the Ehrhoff injury is going to hurt them for puck moving, but they have Leopold in the back end. Tyler Myers is still out, too. So that exacerbates the situation when you have injuries such as that.
Yeah. That Ron Wilson walking through the lobby there, boys?
I'm not sure. Oh, it looks like it. I don't have my glasses.
Yes, it is. So everybody's coming down. This is the center point of the hockey world tonight. Now that
Ezra's here.
Now that Ezra's here, of course, and now that the Leafs, the Team Canada USA game doesn't have as much cachet as it had earlier or on the schedule.
It doesn't.
Jets Leafs tonight, 6:00. Mr. Lube game day here on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak, Shane Knighty, and Brian Munns have the call. Hustler and Lawless. Follow us at 3:00, and then Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 p.m. James Wisniewski, another bad contract signing. He's out. Broke his ankle.
Yeah, just like the terrible contract signings keep falling. That's a broken ankle. I think he's out 4 weeks minimum. That team's done anyway, so might as well be bad and get a high draft pick.
No, that team.
Question is whether or not Scott Housen and Scott O'Neill are there to see it.
Yeah.
That's the question. But, I mean, the season's a write-off, so you lose Wisniewski again. He's an overrated defenseman. They overpaid him. His loss is significant in terms of their lineup, but his addition was far more insignificant than it was made out to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, overpaying just to say you're doing something. I mean, it's right. And that handcuffs, I mean, those aren't one-year contracts. Those are contracts that handcuff the team for...
James Wisniewski's agent should be in the Hall of Fame for that one.
He's a Hall of Fame agent strictly by earning that contract, anointing him
to the Hall of Fame.
Whereas Thomas Wilkins' agent got fired the day after they signed the contract. That was my favorite off-season transaction. Thomas Wilkins' agent did such a bad job, he got immediately fired.
That's right. He did.
Now, the biggest of the injuries, Matt Duchene of the Colorado Avalanche.
Big one.
The Avs have been playing surprisingly well so far this year.
They were streaking before the Jets beat them.
Before the Jets beat them, they had been very good. I mean, a hot streak on home ice and overall.
A lot of young talent, a lot of speed on that roster.
Yeah, and I mean, they're right in the, everybody's in the race, but they're at the race for the bottom two playoff spots in the Western Conference right now.
And that's one of those where you kind of got to get them because you gave up the first round pick for Semyon Varlamov.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, which we still don't agree with as a move, but I mean, there's a lot of young talent in Colorado, so I think things are trending upwards at the very least.
It'd be nice to have another top 10 pick coming up.
Well, then they should.
But yeah, Drew. I mean, they're in 11th place there, as every other team in this league. They played as many games as anybody else, mostly more than everybody else has. They are a 1 point out of the playoff spot. Do I think that they're going to make it? No, and I think the trade's foolish, and it'll look foolish, and that's what it is. But they won 7 out of their last 10. They can beat you with speed. They have a lot of young players there. Ryan O'Reilly's had a nice year. He's a favorite of Don Cherry, of course.
Yeah.
But this is not a team that can afford to lose Matt Duchene, is he?
I would agree. And Paul Stastny's not playing the best hockey of his career, which is dumbfounding me.
And I like him a lot. But
yeah, I do too. I mean, he was putting up huge numbers, and then he ran into some injury issues, and he's one guy that they can't afford to lose, and that seems to be a thing that's going on. And you know, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, and I wish I did. And, you know, hopefully we'll get on this in the second half of the season on a legal curve. But it seems like there are more man games lost this year than ever. And there are always injuries in hockey. I mean, that's just the way it is. And the Jets certainly have not used that as an excuse. You got Brian Little out. You got Dustin Bufflett out. And it's going to be short term. Those guys aren't out for very long. But you had Tobias Enstrom out for 20 games, and the Jets have done very well, with lots of injuries. But you look around the NHL, and there's a lot of teams right now that only have one line going, and Colorado is one of those teams. And you've got Ryan O'Reilly, and you've got Milan Hayduk and Gabriel Landeskog, and after that, I mean, you don't have a lot. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are no different in a sense either. One line, their injuries are more on defense, but it's a situation where you're starting to see this is maybe this is just me. I've found that you look around more and more,
you might want to run away
as
now.
You run. Gary Lawless is giving me the stare down here, and I am trembling in my boots right now because I did throw out a one-liner, but hopefully we'll be okay. But
you guys can hug it out afterwards.
Let me back to Colorado for 1 second here.
Yeah.
Ryan O'Reilly's leading the team. We mentioned he had a good year, but he's leading the team with 26 points. Matt Duchene has 24 in 39 games. Hayduk is 23 in 39. Stastny 21 in 36. That's an awful offensive performance from those guys. So this season has to fall, and much of the season's lack of success so far, although what were they projected to be? But even so, I mean, you expected some of these guys to be far more productive. So losing Duchene out of there, sure, it's only 24 points in the season, but he's a second-leading scorer. So it needs to be taken into context.
I mean, if you went through their team, who's probably their best player? It's probably Matt Duchene.
Yes.
So
forward,
I mean,
at least.
Best forward, yeah. I mean, so, you know, anyways, we'll see much more of Colorado next year.
We will, and... Are they in the division? They're not
in the division, but they're you see them, yeah, four times.
One more.
No, you only see them once this year.
Yep. I thought it's only teams out of division, out of conference, is only twice a year now.
Is it only twice? Oh yeah, home and home. Yeah, that's right. Sorry, I got confused. We're not sure how that whole realignment.
It's moving a seat over. We need a new host.
We need a. I'm out. Am I out? Is that it? Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, maybe we'll see if Hustler and Gary want to jump on with us. One final segment still to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Mr. Lube Game Day, live on TSN 1290.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from MTS Center on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Ezra, are you not going to have a discussion with me, Ezra?
Ezra, get it back on.
Chaos is ensuing here down at MTS Center. Gary Lawless has come to rebuff Ezzy's comments.
No, I came to do my show. And when I arrived, I was asked. Yeah, about
let me do this one last promo. One final segment.
Hey, I know David Carr, by the way.
Yeah, do you?
Monopoly Realty. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
our newest sponsor. This segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Who owns Rumors, guys? Where's the hookup there?
It's not important who owns Rumors. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for something still to do tonight, I understand the 10 o'clock show is sold out, but the 6 o'clock show has a few tickets remaining, so you can check out Rumors. Give them a call, 488-4520. Gary?
Ask for Drew's mom. She works the door.
That's not the case, Gary. It's not the case, but you know what? Your daughter, when she turns of age, she's definitely got a job there for life.
All right. Well, she lives close there. So
exactly. It's right around the corner.
Yeah.
So, Ezzy took a bit of a shot at you there, Gary.
I didn't hear the shot. What was the shot?
Oh, thanks.
Oh,
yeah, well,
full disclosure.
You didn't hear the shot.
Drew doesn't let any opportunity to throw someone under the bus pass by him. So
what was the shot?
Okay. Let me. Hold on. I can pull the shot up here. So Gary, when you're on his way here, obviously not driving and texting while not driving.
Pulled over, for sure.
Said that the Flyers, you know, we're talking about how the Flyers are arrogant and living on an old rep.
Yeah.
And as he said...
I said, oh, is that Gary texting in a description of himself?
I mean, it was
of course a joke. I mean, well,
of course.
First off, I mean, I'm going to be self-deprecating and throw myself under the bus, literally right
Listen,
now.
Ezra,
I mean, I don't, hold on, I don't even have, I don't even have
out
a
of
rep.
A touch and living on my rep from when I covered the Gold Eyes, then I guess, you know, I don't know what rep I have to be living
on. It was a joke. It didn't
I'm just establishing one, I think.
Gary, you
Hustler
know
only took me on a little while ago. That's when my street cred really started to soar.
It was It was obviously a joke. It had.
I guess I can't wear a toque and an IC sweater hold down the fort at the atrium of the MTS Center.
No, it is. Do you want to wear?
I like the toques.
Do you want to wear the toque when you guys are on air?
I saw the toque this morning and I was a little disappointed I didn't have one.
We'll get you one.
To your Steve Ott, Peter LaViolette discussion.
Yeah.
And I have two things to ask you. Number one, that's the bench that he has to go through, right? He's got to go through the gate onto their bench.
Yeah. Yep.
So why he wouldn't wait for those guys to clear out of their bench is beyond me. Well, I know why. He's arrogant, and he's living on an old rep, that they're the Broad Street Bullies.
Go bleep yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And number two, what would happen if, who's the coach in Dallas now? I can't even think of his name.
Glenn Gullickson.
From Winnipeg, but he's a Manitoban. Yep.
What would happen if Glenn Gullickson tried to cross through the Flyers bench at Wells Fargo before the Flyers had vacated it? I'll tell you what would happen. Paul Holmgren would have his eagle head down there. He'd be going nuts. Ed Snyder would have a press conference after the game. It would be mayhem. So yep. I think that Steve Ott, listen, he's a little chirper and a little rat. But listen, you lay with dogs, you get fleas. He went into Steve Ott's house. He should expect a reaction.
You lay with Ezzy, you get fleas also.
Ezra wants to fire slings and arrows. That's not my game.
I love
the illegal curve. I give the illegal curve props. I don't know why I have to be Ezra's punching bag.
Gary, it was a complete joke. You know that I can take it more than anybody.
What's the song? Old Lang Syne, don't they sing that tonight?
Yeah,
that's
a New Year's song.
Yes, it is. And isn't it about, old bad fights and feuds, let them be forgot as the New Year starts? I guess Ezra wants to get his last shot in before he sings Old Lang Syne.
It's been a while since
Gary's rolling up his sleeves right now. I'm getting a little nervous.
I'm not even going to say it. What's next?
I got to be honest. Hold on, because I'm getting a little bit heartfelt right now. I see myself a little bit in you, and I'm your biggest fan.
Wow.
And that's why I want to have that relationship that we can always joke around.
We're not there yet, Ez.
Okay. But I want to be. See, that's what I'm talking about.
It takes two.
I always think that you're going to let me in a little bit into the inner circle, and then you just...
Not yet.
You just kid. You want to keep him at arm's length away. I can't necessarily blame
you. Much fun.
But seriously, Hustler, I'm scared right now.
Welcome to my world, Ginsburg. You guys have a long-term history, though. Gary can't ever get upset
with
you.
Hustler has never been scared of me. He gives way better than he takes. It's with the few times we've got it on, and we have.
Yeah,
there's been a few times where Rack Kearney had to leave the studio so that Hustler and I could finish up.
I'm going to leave you two to yourselves for a moment.
Like, it's a married couple. We've had a long-term partnership, and there are times where it's...
Spousal abuse.
Not joking about that, of course.
The most amazing part of this week, as far as I'm concerned, Ezzy and I have now spent the last 4 or 5 days together, and we're still talking.
It's been the last 4 days.
Yeah, how'd you guys like
Great work of the morning, guys, by
Thanks.
The way. I even made a point of trying to get up before 9 a couple days.
Let's be honest. I see you just going to go to bed before then.
It's a varying clock, depending on the days.
Yeah. We enjoyed
Fluid.
It. It was great. It was a lot of fun. The mornings were early, but that's okay. We knew that coming in, and we enjoyed ourselves.
No way to live a life, guys.
Are the Jets are now, if they win tonight, would be 2 back of Florida for the lead in the Southeast.
Yeah
and Florida plays
Are we
too.
Ready to make that? Yeah, if Florida were to lose, yeah. Are we ready to make that, that move? Is that what we're going to start to pay attention to? Can the Jets win the Southeast? Is that the race to watch?
I'll tell you what, if this team starts off 2012 2 points out of first place, it's got to be part of the discussion.
Look, my wedding is booked for April 22nd. At the beginning of the year.
Lots of confidence.
At the beginning of the year, I was not worried about that at all. Now I'm getting a lot more concerned.
That'll be broadcast live on TSN 1290, hosted by H&L.
The wedding. You guys are going to come down to Kentucky for the wedding? It sounds like a good idea.
I've been to Kentucky before.
Really?
Yeah. Bought a hog there.
Like a motorcycle or an actual hog?
No, hog, a hog.
Went
that's
to a couple
they do,
bars
they...
in Kentucky when I was staying in Cincinnati.
I was joking.
They had like a different drinking age or something.
Yes, yeah, I've gone over the river from Cincinnati to go to Kentucky late night.
Well, the Cincinnati airport's actually in Kentucky.
I've been by a river recently, too.
During the Moose
In
days.
A van, sleeping.
there's no reason why you can't talk about this team right now as potential winners of the Southeast Division. I mean, Washington's
is Florida a better team? Like, you know, if you look at their roster, are they that? You know, they've got Brian Campbell and Ed Jovanovski on the back end, pretty impressive. Thomas Fleischman, is he healthy right now?
No,
he's not healthy.
I don't think he is. No, they have seven injured forwards, including Weiss.
Well, they just signed John Madden because they were so riddled with injuries.
Yeah. But Gary, depth is a big issue for both these teams. I think I love the Jets' depth on the back end, up front. You know, well they don't have 12 legit right now. So once they get into injuries, you know, it starts to change even more.
Right, but, and I think they are in the discussion for leading the division, but I think the fact that they're in the playoff race has a lot to do with the teams that everyone said, there's no chance the Jets are better than these teams. There's no way the Jets are better than the Capitals. There's no way the Jets are better than the Hurricanes. There's no way the Jets are better than the Lightning. Well, all of those teams right now are behind the Jets, and you know there's 2 months to go here before we start really making those playoff seeding decisions or you know, predictions, really, because there's so much more hockey to play.
Which way are the Leafs going?
Down.
I'll tell you what.
They were smoking mirrors.
There's a little love fest between the Leafs management and Jets management, or parts of it at this point in time. The Jets spanked the Leafs tonight. That's over. This will be a real interesting. They have a history from Brian Burke when he was GM of the Vancouver Canucks.
Sure.
Was in essence GM of the Manitoba Moose.
Right. Yep.
And you know, there are stories. The relationship had its moments of good times. It also had very combative moments. Craig Heisinger wanted things done a certain way. Brian Burke, when he left the Vancouver Canucks, hired Randy Carlyle, squired him off to Anaheim. They won a Stanley Cup. I know that the Jets, True North, had a great relationship with the Ducks. They would bore players. Jason Jaffrey's a guy who just last year was sent here as a result.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of they're intertwined. They're meshed together in many ways. And those friendships, once one guy beats up on the other, and especially, one group is the bully right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
So when the little guy, when he reaches up and pokes the other guy in the eye, the big guy doesn't like it. And I know the way the Leafs will react, and it'll be sour. And it'll be great. This could be a fantastic rivalry.
It should be a fantastic rivalry. I mean, these are two teams that are going to battle for those, the final few playoff spots. You know, they play tonight. They play again, Thursday night back in the ACC.
The second of back-to-back games with the Habs coming first.
Exactly.
That trip, guys, coming up is,
three and four nights.
The Jets have had a great month of December. I guess if they win tonight, it's 10 wins in December. Is that
10, 3, and 1 in December if
fantastic,
they win tonight.
Fantastic, right? There's no, if you're listening, they get an A for the month of December. I'll tell you what, though. What's coming up is the big exam.
Yeah, of course,
they go in, they go Montreal, Toronto, back-to-back. Then they got Buffalo, then they got Boston. Buffalo is no slouch. Boston is among the best teams in the National Hockey League. Those are all on the road. If they go 500 on that trip, wow. Give them a big kiss when they get home.
They've played three of those four teams already on the road. They've lost three of those games.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they have to do it.
They're a different team than they were when they were last on the road, without question.
Absolutely.
And that road game they played earlier this week in Denver, if they duplicate that format and play like that,
they're going to be successful.
They're going to have great success. And listen, Toronto and Montreal, those are the games to grab.
Yeah.
Because Montreal sucks, and Toronto's... They just gave Ron Wilson extension.
We didn't know why, and we went through that in great detail.
They got it. It's a pension. It's a golden handshake.
Ron walked by here. We probably didn't want to.
Yeah, we probably didn't want to mention that. Right,
torn his contract apart.
You're
in
the media. You don't have to worry about it. Although, in essence, you're all in the same family now, because Ron works for TSN. He works for Bell Media.
So do you.
No, I don't.
No?
No. Okay. I work for Hustler.
That's a hell of a company to work for.
The Hustler and Lawless Show.
Can you speak to your boss for me then?
Hustler's the CEO. I'm not even an executive.
Let's leave it there, guys. Hustler and Lawless coming up next. Thanks for joining us. Big shout out to Michael Trakos of the National Post for joining us.
Thanks.
This is Mr. Loop Game Day on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Really, from all of us at Illegal Curve, to our audience, to Hustler and Lawless, to everybody at TSN 1290, nothing but the best in the coming new year.